Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you. And greetings to everyone. Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, we're going to continue our series, Conversations with Brother AC. And I kind of like set the pace a little bit and set the tone, but talking about something I kept hearing at the barbershop. I kept hearing this thing at the barbershop about it, this term, the real nigga, a real nigga, this real nigga, that real niggas. But I never really got a clear definition of what a real nigga is. Looking at a bunch of individuals. And I hope at the end of this conversation we'll come to some kind of agreement. What is a real nigga? I'm interested in hearing everyone's thoughts and views about what is a real nigga. Brother AC.
Yes, Chef Rob. How's it going?
All right. How you doing? You're a little under the weather, man. I was concerned about you, man.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime I get under the weather, I guess you should be concerned about me. So that's a good thing. But to alleviate your concerns... Obviously, I sound a lot better than I did last week, although I was truly chomping at the bit to be on your show, especially to talk to the brother from St. Louis. But that would have been an economic – that's another thing. I mean, I really don't want to get bogged down on particular topics. I mean, yeah, I can discuss the economic thing because I think it's so important. But there are so many subjects out there that are important to black people as a whole, and black people in particular, and all people in general. How about that? So a change of topic about this time might not be a bad idea. And,
but I want to know what a real nigga is. We'll come back to that, but I need to know what a real nigga is. You've heard that term a bunch of times. What does that mean?
From AC's perspective, look, I'm not suggesting that I'm an expert on the linguistics. But from AC's perspective, it seems to me that the term nigger, at one point in time, it was obviously very derogatory, but that was way back when, and people, certain groups of people anyway, want to forget those years and thereby forget those terms. Obviously, back then it was derogatory, and so therefore you could make the argument that in some situations today, the term "real nigga" could be what, even complimentary, depending on who's speaking it about who, as who's speaking it about whom. So you know, it's another word that you know, for my money. You know, when you have a situation like that, when you have a word that can mean either or, you sort of diminish the significance of the word. I mean, you take for instance when the word was being spoken, when it was first being spoken. I mean, it was obvious, you know, the hatred, the vile, you know, that was attached, associated with that word. So everybody knew somebody was calling you a nigger in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Obviously, they didn't mean you any good. And of course, from my money, from what I've heard, from the way it was explained to me, I mean, the situation became so detrimental for black people as a whole to hear the term nigger that, you know, to alleviate, to try to mitigate some of that pain that was obviously involved with hearing that. They tried to put a positive spin on it. I don't know if it was a good or a bad thing, but I know it was a survival thing. So their positive spin turned the word around so that when black people used it towards black people, it was actually complimentary, a complimentary situation, I put it that way. So they tried to turn a negative into a positive. But you were about to say.
But part of it, I think that part of accepting that word in a lot of instances is accepting of a lot of negative behavior towards you and people like
True.
You.
I go with that.
Accept,
go with that.
You, go ahead and also accept some people going ahead and making fun of the brothers and sisters in Africa, saying that they all got bones in their nose, and we know that's not totally true. And spear chuckles and all that other old nonsense. Well, we know that's not totally true.
Okay. Well, first of all, the spear chucker thing really doesn't bother me. Because if I can be so accurate with a spear that I can toss and throw it up your asshole, I consider that, you know, a positive.
You know what, man? Hey, I feel the same way.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to tell somebody that, man. I was like, wait a minute. Now, if I could throw this thing the length of maybe 3 football fields and hit
exactly.
you in the face,
exactly.
you can call me them names all you want.
That spear chucker shit, I mean, you know, you didn't say that to Bruce Jenner when he was winning the decathlon, now, did you? He was.
No, where did he get that from? Where did that come from?
Huh?
Them spear chuckers.
What, Bruce Jenner? Yeah, spear chucker. I mean, he was throwing that javelin. Javelin's nothing but a spear. He was chucking that spear. Did it quite well. Did it to a gold medal. Y'all love that shit. So now how y'all gonna turn around and how you gonna turn around and talk about the brothers because they can toss it farther than Bruce can?
Right. But Bruce had one was made in the laboratory. These brothers carved theirs out, but with a knife.
Well, all the more reason. I mean, if I can throw one, you know, with all of that aerodynamic design, without all of the aerodynamic design in it, as far as I can you imagine what I can do with one that's you know, aerodynamically is superior?
Yeah, man. I'm like, man.
Maybe I can toss that bad boy from the western shores of Africa all the way to New York City. Never doubt a brother.
So that might be a real nigga then, right?
Well, that would be a real nigga, I guarantee you. So, you know, another
but
thing.
But these other
like
clowns
this.
Out
one
here
thing.
Going ahead doing stupidness in the street, going to jail and then calling their parents, them ain't real niggas to me.
It depends on which definition of real nigga you're taking. Like, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they are, you know, they could be considered real niggas. You know, emphasis on niggas. You see what I'm saying? I mean, that's the way the word has been played.
Oh, the ones that you don't want to be around, that kind of group, you would call them niggas?
Well, the original definition of nigger. You remember that? Less than, all that other. Oh, you don't?
No. Oh. It's always been like a mystery to me. What the fuck does it mean? Niggas.
Okay, well. So my understanding.
I hear so many definitions of it, and people go ahead and give their account of it, and I read some of the stuff, and it's still baffling to me. You know, what does it mean? I don't really think it applies to me, though.
You know, first of all, you know, I try not to use this term, but it keeps coming to my mouth, so forgive me. In order to talk about niggas, if you're going to take it back that far, you have to talk about white people. I don't want to call them hunkies because that is a compliment. We'll call them white people, okay? Now, I don't like the word Caucasian. That's too scientific. White people who they basically coined the word nigger. Now, the deal was, for my money, what I've been told, what I've heard was that, you know, it originated in the area around the Niger River. Of course, white people who have their own pronunciation for everything. I mean, Saddam Hussein became Sodom to George Bush the first because he knew it was derogatory and he knew it wasn't his name. So, you know, so Niger became nigger as far as my money goes. You know,
that George Bush guy didn't have like a speech impediment. Are you sure, man?
No. He called himself that was a political. His handlers, his speechwriters, told him that from what my understanding was, that the term Sodom, as far as the Islamic language is concerned, or the language of Iraq is concerned, the term Sodom is derogatory, where the term Saddam, you know, has a significant meaning to it, has a proud meaning to it. So he messed up his name on purpose. That's what I was told. I might be wrong about that, but I get that information from a third party. So I like the way that sounds. It sounds like something that white people would do, purposely mispronounce. As a matter of fact, while I was out on my respite, I happened to tune in. I like Clint Eastwood. I have to admit that. I like the Westerns. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. So I tuned in Joe Kidd. And the character played by Robert Duvall, he was chasing this Hispanic that was giving people on the border trouble, and his name was Chama. And he took great pleasure in calling him Chama. You know, like I said, they like to do that pronunciation thing just to mess your shit up. So the term Niger became nigger. And they even added a G, you know, to really make it their own. And, the thing about it back then, in its origin, of course, was that every time you heard that word, for my money, you heard it at the crack of a whip or a feeling of the balls or, you know, snatching off of a female's clothes, black female's clothes, of course, you know, during the slave trade. So, and like I said, from there, that's for my money where it came from. And then from there, like I said, it split. Black people had to do something to protect themselves from it since they couldn't hang the motherfuckers that was using that shit. So how they protected themselves, well, they tried to turn a positive into a negative, which is always, you know, rife with the possibility of error. So
lots of errors. Yeah. Lots of errors.
I mean, you know, and for my money, sooner or later, at some point in time, unless, of course, there is the, you know, I always hope for divine intervention, too. I mean, you know, the, of course, like I said, we talked about the natural correction situation where something has gone wrong for an extended period of time and it can no longer exist that way. So a natural correction will take place. As far as my money, is a form of divine intervention. But mostly when I'm thinking about divine intervention, I really espouse to the concept of a real wrath of God stuff, you know, where God finally says, you know what, I've been treating them people too bad for too long, so I think I'm going to do something about this. I'd have no problem with that, you know. I mean, if old boy can walk through the Red Sea and then it closed up on the Egyptians, I mean, you know, God can arrange a little something like that for black people, for my money. I'm not trying to tell the boy, man, what to do. You know, he handles his business, let him handle his business, but that would make me smile.
Okay. Hello, I got a couple of callers. 314-974. Captain Hitt, is that you? Captain Hitt, sounds like he's maybe blowing his nose.
Ooh, caught my soul.
I'll leave his line open.
I'm here, Rob. I'll be back with you in a little bit. I'm listening right now.
Okay. All right. It's cool. Brother Pianki, your line is open.
Hey, Rob, what's going on?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Hey, AC. How's everything?
Oh, I'm feeling a lot better, brother. Feeling a lot better.
That's good. Had some cool nights here lately, at least here in this town. Down in the 60s.
That's the taboo for me. I need that 96 degrees in the shade from third world.
Well, at nighttime it's all right. It helps the rice to grow.
Okay. I'm not
Brother
just so happy to be around to be satisfied about that.
Brother Pianki,
so what's going on your end, my very affluent brother?
Oh.
Hey, Brother Pianki, your line is echoing. Feel that? So, okay, let's see. Hello? Brother AC, you still there? Do everybody get to speak?
Yeah, Brother AC here.
All right. Brother Pianki, your line was echoing a little bit. I think he's back.
It must be the CIA.
Could be.
Why? I mean, I'm going to leave that alone. No. You know, it would seem to me that the CIA would be kind of sort of like your best friend.
No, I don't care too much for them. They go around causing all kinds of problems.
Oh, How about the NSA? They cool with you, or you just an FBI man? Straight up American stuff, huh?
No. Actually, some of the things that they do is anti-American. Constitutionally,
yeah.
Anyway.
True that, and that stands for the CIA and most of the security organizations that exist in this situation we call America. Did you get a chance to hear what the brother wanted to talk about today?
No.
Brother Fionn. He wants to talk, Brother Chef Rob wants to talk about real niggas.
Well, I don't.
I guess he had to wait too long to get his hair cut, and there was some conversation in the barbershop amongst the young brothers, I'm sure, about
no,
what
is. No,
there was
a couple of older cats there too, man, and it seemed like everybody was engaged in that, you know, and it just kind of, I just never really knew what that term meant. Why is it pushed around so much, and why doesn't, you know, I think it's something that's gotten us to a mindset that's really, really screwed up.
Okay. It's
forcing a whole lot of niggas.
Elaborate. What do you mean?
I think it's enforcing a whole lot because the individuals are mainly I see using it are the ones going ahead and causing us more harm than good. Even at times I've heard people address Jesse Jackson's. Yeah, that's a real nigga. That's my nigga there. So what is it for? Anyone?
Like I said, I mean, for me, from what I understand, and I'm not suggesting that I espouse to the theory, but it goes back to trying to thwart a negative by turning it into a positive. You know, I mean, that's the only example that I could possibly give that would make any sense. Other than that, I mean, but the only thing wrong with that, I mean, the problem that I'm having with it now is that you know, young white people. And I am truly not used to this. Young white people seem to have taken it upon themselves that, you know, it's okay for them to use that word. And I'm sorry, but as long as I breathe breath, I have a problem with that.
You know, I also seen a video.
With that.
I also saw a video of, I can't remember the rapper's name, young rapper who had been raped pretty much by some other guys who have been calling themselves real niggas. See?
Rape.
And this rape. Yeah, he had been raped by some other rappers. I can't remember.
R-A-P-E-D?
Raped by some
individuals.
Raped. It was on my Facebook page. I just kind of like brushed it off. But it just kind of kept coming back to me. I wanted to go ahead and get it. But
wait
a minute.
I still can't understand what you're saying. Are you saying rape, like sexual rape?
Yes, sir.
So are you, excuse me, Brother Bianchi. So are you saying that a brother was sexually abused and he made a rap song out of it?
No, what he did was recorded conversations between him and his accusers. And
him and his abuser?
Yeah.
Him and his abuser.
Man, let me find that thing there, man. That thing was wild, man.
So are you telling me that someone got raped and they had a conversation with the guy that did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy, ain't it, man?
Hey, you learn something new every day. That's a new one on me.
Yeah, look at what kind of society we go ahead and turn it to. Look at where we're going here. Look at the path we're going at.
Okay, well, what about it?
And so this is one thing I was trying to get you to see the other day when I was trying to tell you, hey, look, you know, this plays a bigger part into some of our history. What we're going to be looked at and judged at today, people tomorrow is going to be real, real.
Okay, so what do you see as the major cause for the direction that our country is headed?
Well, the reason it's headed in a direction that no one of us can control. But that gets like to that when you hear people say they love black folks. I don't love all black folks. I think some of them need to be killed and flushed down the toilet.
Ooh. Well, you know.
That's harsh, brother.
And I find it difficult to say. you know, really. But the reason that I find it difficult to say is because, okay, let me say it. I don't condone the killing of anyone. Anyone. I don't think that any human being has a right to take another human being's life. Having said that, let me state for the record that there's a statute of limitation on murder, so anyone that would be foolish enough to admit to having been involved in a murder or the taking of someone's life actually risks their life and liberty. You take it from there.
Well, no, if a person deserves to be killed, they need to be killed.
Okay, Brother Pianchi, I understand what you're saying, but like I said, I don't espouse to that. I don't believe that any.
That's why I come
out
in the chat room. I'm pro concealed carry, open carry laws, and also pro castle doctrine too. Stand your ground.
Castle. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that means there's going to be a whole bunch of. So that means there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that, like what Chef Rob was talking about, except from here on in, it's going to be at the point of a gun, and it's who draws their gun first.
Yeah.
Or you know, with the conceal and carry situation, I mean, if I'm a criminal and I'm hard up enough, and in this economic, I hate to use that word because I really didn't want to discuss economics. I came loaded for bear to discuss economics with you, Brother Pianchi, but you know, I don't want to lock up the conversation on the subject that's so vast. I appreciate the fact that Chef Rob brought in another topic, but what I was thinking was just to mention it, in the economic situation that we now find ourselves in, everyone's going to get desperate, especially those who believe that they can take in order for them to survive. And if you got to conceal and carry instead of trying to take without violence, they're just going to take with violence, which means instead of walking up and giving you an opportunity to give your money up and live, you're going to find a whole bunch of situations where they're just walking up to you, blasting you, killing you, because they're afraid that you might have a concealed to carry weapon on you, and then taking your money. Of course,
oh, yeah.
There's going to be a lot of hits and misses in that situation. You know, you're going to blast some people that, you know, and under this particular economic environment, they're not going to have any money. So that's going to happen a lot. There's going to be a lot of people that are killed for absolutely, positively no reason. But, you know, if you're hard up enough, if you're out there on the crime trip and you think someone might have a weapon, especially someone as affluent as you, blast them first and take his money later. That's going to be the rule of the day. Makes sense.
Does it make sense?
Yeah. If you're a criminal, it does. But then again, crime doesn't make sense. So, for my money.
Whose line is that?
Sound like somebody on life support.
I guess that's Captain Hiss line, man.
Is the brother coming in?
He might be having some issues. Let me see. Captain Hiss, you got something to say, brother? All right, I'm going to mute your line, man.
Can you hear him when you speak? Can you hear him, or is he as muted as you?
If he wants to chime in and say something, just press 1, then I'll go ahead and see him pop up. So
okay.
That's it when you're ready. But what was this thing you were saying, Brother Pianchi? Maybe it's you, AC. You didn't want to talk about
what?
Economics. What was the problem with that economics? You kind of lost me on some of that.
Okay, well, my only concern is you know, there are a broad spectrum of topics that we can discuss. And most of the time when Brother Pianchi and I on the phone, we do this back and forth about the economic situation because of of his affluence and my concern for the people that aren't affluent. So I didn't want to monopolize the conversation with such a broad, you know, yeah, I mean, the only way you can get into economics is to get into it in depth. So, and that requires a lot of statistics, which the brother is good at. You know, he handles his statistics rather well, I'd say that. But, you know, there are other statistics, which means we're doing a statistical thing. And I hope anyone that's listening to this conversation realizes that statistics are things that can be manipulated to further your agenda, enhance your point, however you want to put it. Statistics are a tool.
Yeah, like when they say 100 million blacks was brought out of Africa to America to be slaves.
You have a problem with that? No, they say more than 100 million were killed in the process, actually.
Yeah, well,
you have a problem with that number?
Yeah, I got a problem with that number.
You have any refutable evidence to bring forward? Well, how do you feel about the 6 million Jews? You got a problem with that? Or the 20 million Russians? You got a problem with those numbers, too?
I never commented on the 6 million Jews.
I did. I asked the question. The question was, do you have a problem with that number, like you have a problem with the however you want to put it. Do you have a problem with the 6 million Jews being killed during World War II or the 20 million Russians being killed during that same period of time? Like you have a problem with the 100 million blacks that were allegedly killed during the slave trade?
Wasn't no 100 million blacks brought out of Africa to
support
the world?
So you say,
that's a difference between being affluent and non-affluent.
If you want
to be a millionaire, you never listen to somebody who's only made $50,000 a year.
Okay, so now back to my question before you go on. Do you have a problem with the 6 million Jews or the 20 million Russians, or is it just a problem with the 100 million blacks?
I wasn't talking about the 6 million Jews or 20 million Russians. I was saying
that's my question, Brother Pianchi. This is my question to you. You said, and I quote, I have a problem with the 100, because I asked you, you have a problem with that number? And you said yes. So therefore you said you have a problem with the 100 million black people that were allegedly killed during the slave trade.
Wasn't no 100 million black people coming out of Africa?
Before you go on, can you answer my question?
I don't have no problem with the 20 million Russians, but I never have done no study on the 6 million Jews. People say
study on 100 million blacks.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, common sense would tell you, look at the number one that you could put on the ship, look at the duration that it would take to come from there over here, and it just don't equate. It does not equate.
Okay. So this isn't factual data. This is common sense.
It's not factual, David. Common sense says, I think it's emotionalism.
This is your common sense.
It's a lot of that emotionalism and fantasizing that goes on in the African American community on a lot of things.
Hold on, AC. My question to you, Brother Pianchi, and Dr. Henry Clark is saying it's close to 60 million. So is that number close to being accurate?
What did he say? 60 million what now?
60 million blacks had lost their lives in that transatlantic slave trade.
No, I don't think it was 60 million either.
I would suggest to you that Dr. Clark did research on that as opposed to your common sense theory.
I got practically every lecture that Dr. Clark done on VHS tape. I have taken his lectures and created curriculums out of them. I don't recall Dr. Clark saying that.
Okay. Well, let me see if I remember correctly.
I have every lecture that Clark
When he was referring to, because I just got that clip, and he was referring to it when people talk about the 6 million, when they talk about the 6 million Jews, and we're not going. He said when you get to that 6 million, you just begin to count because that, you know, you got to deal with that 60 million Africans in that transatlantic slave trade. So was he talking about that many people lost their lives, or how many people's lives were disrupted altogether?
Well, people make it sound like it was people losing their lives or being brought here. Well, we know it wasn't no 100 million brought here.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this how?
Where are they?
So, at the bottom of the Middle Passage.
That's like saying 6 million came out of Egypt and wandered around in the damn desert. That was about 200 miles square. Much.
To answer your point, the suggestion is that they are at the bottom of the Middle Passage. That's where they are.
So at what point in time...
No need in bringing a dead slave to the United States.
At what point in time do a ship owner realize that he's leaving with 200 and arriving with 5, that it ain't worth the money? Just think about this. How much could a ship hold?
Yeah, between two and three.
So if we took the whole ship, say a ship held 300, 100 million divided by 300 is how many ships? How long does it take a ship to come from the West Coast to the Americas? How many months?
Was it 3 months?
And how many ships are we talking about? Come on, man,
right.
We can do the math on that.
How many ships are we talking about traveling in the slave trade?
On how many boats and sure connectors and this, that, and the other? That's very
simple. You're the statistics man. How many ships are we talking about?
Some things that's too foolish to even do statistics on.
Oh. So now we're back to the common sense realm where your common sense dictates that 100 million people being killed in, okay. How many people do you believe were killed in the slave trade?
Not how many people I believe.
What number to you is acceptable?
I made the statement, young man, that it wasn't 100 million.
You keep confusing me with somebody. What makes you think I'm young?
You're 50 years old, ain't you? You just been around the block 2 or 3 times compared to some people I know.
How many times have I been to the African continent?
How many?
One.
Well,
one.
I don't think, and you probably went there as a tourist, right?
No, I went there as a member of your military to protect your ass.
Okay.
Don't question me, man.
That's worse.
Get yourself outfit mine. You know, see, you keep making these assumptions about me. You don't know anything about me.
I asked you how many times have you been? You said you went
there. And you made an assumption.
You suggested
I went there as a tourist.
Most people do.
Well, I'm not most people. You can refer to me as AC so you don't get me confused. I don't respond to the term most people.
You clarified and said you went paramilitary, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, then. So if you went per-military, you
so
had
don't
to be,
make an assumption. This is the first time you made it. Go on. Can I get you to answer a question since I directly answered yours?
What number of slaves dying in the slave trade
is acceptable to you? That was my question.
Wait a minute. You said you was there on military, right?
Yeah.
So you had a curfew or whatever they call it that you had to be back. Were you on ship or were you on a base? What country were you in?
I was on ship. Morocco. Morocco. African continent, pal.
When did you have? How much leave did you have off that ship?
I was on duty.
How long?
I think I was there for about a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, AC, believe me. A week and a half is not going to get you in no contact.
You tried to suggest that I've never even been to the African continent. I proved
Morocco,
you wrong on that.
Morocco or Ghana, yep. Or Nigeria or Togo or Benin or Congo or A Zambia is a whole lot different than a Morocco.
Okay, yeah, I know.
Not belittling what it was, but it's not, you know, it's not as great
so
as.
What's your point? What point are you trying to make? Because I haven't been to Africa, I don't know anything about Africa. Is that your point?
Not from experience, no.
Okay, so what does your worldly experience tell you about Africa? What does your worldly experience in this case tell you about the African slave trade? Because that's where this conversation began. Now, I'm not asking about your economic experience, which you seem to suggest is so prolific. You know, I'm asking you, you made a statement about you have a problem with 100 million Africans dying in the Middle Passage. And
yeah.
I'm asking you, would be acceptable to you?
Person,
number two, what numbers do you have?
If I was doing it from a business standpoint, there's nowhere in the world that could have been pulled off with the infrastructure that was available.
Okay, nowhere in the world.
With the infrastructure that's available, no.
Nowhere in the world.
You can't fly.
What you're saying is it is impossible.
And you can't
100
fly
million Africans who have died.
From New York to California in an hour in an F4 Phantom. They just don't go that fast.
Okay, so back to what I was saying. What you're suggesting is nowhere in the world was the term that you used. That it's impossible for 100 million Africans to die in the slave trade, during the slave trade.
Nowhere in the world that it's impossible. You just said that yourself. I said it's not possible with the infrastructure available for that to be pulled off at that time in history. No.
Do you stand on your nowhere in the world statement? Because you said that.
Well, when are we not talking about the past?
Can we not get a yes or no answer out of you?
Well, hell yes, it's no window because it's something that's past us. It ain't going to happen now.
And you know that, and you know that why.
It did not happen. So if it did not
happen. How do you know it didn't happen?
Wait a minute. If it didn't happen in this world, what world did it happen in?
How do you know it didn't happen?
My goodness, dude. You got me talking like
the hood. How do you know it didn't happen?
No.
Time travel? Oh, this is your common sense. I'm just asking.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Oh, brother, Santi, you got a fell off. Hey, 313-282, your line is open.
Oh, peace. Is that me?
Yeah.
Peace. This is Brother Josh Stan Elevator. How's everybody doing tonight?
Brother Josh, what's happening, man?
I'm doing all right. I just wanted to add a little something in on this particular topic. I've researched this a little bit because I've heard a lot of different estimates about how many Africans were killed in the transatlantic slave trade. You have varying estimations. The most liberal are around 100 million, as the one brother said. I'm not exactly sure what the brother's name was. And then the most conservative are usually around 2 million, somewhere in there. But
Brother
Pianki. Okay, peace to the Brother Pianki, the elder. Most historians, though, according to the shipping logs and records, say that it's closer to somewhere in between 9 and 12 million. According to the slave logs. Now, within that, there are some nuances that we must discuss when you're talking about, because a lot of people add different, they don't necessarily just count the slaves that actually went on ships or the enslaved people that went on ships. A lot of people, when you get to the 100 million deaths, you're talking about people who died on the continent who never left. For example, you got King Leopold II of Belgium who was controlling the Congo region, and there's estimates that he killed about 20 million Africans. And so when you add in a lot of the colonization, that's sort of how you get up close to the 100 million. I don't know if it actually reaches 100 million or not. That's kind of debatable. But that I think Pianki was correct that there wasn't 100 million blacks on actual slave ships. But they estimate around, you know, about 9 million came to America and the Americas, Central, South, and North. And but, you know, we also do have to count in the because slaves were actually taken all around the world. It wasn't just to America. And so, you know, different figures, we'll have to add them all up. And a lot of people count the deaths on the continent, too. And there's a legitimate argument with that as far as including that within the transatlantic slave trade, although it predated and went well beyond the actual transatlantic or triangular slave trade. So both of the two brothers actually have legitimate points. The brother who's saying 100 million, he may be correct when you add in all of these other figures. And I think the elder Pianki is actually correct on the actual slaves who went on slave ships is nowhere near 100 million. But, you know, it's an interesting debate. And we do have to also, and that 9 to 12 million, those are just actual records. Those are the ones we got records of. We do realize that a lot more people were not accounted for, because they did pack the slave ships and, you know, throw off half of the cargo into the ocean on the way there. So, you know, it's an interesting debate, but I just wanted to add that in just so, you know, just for some clarity. But I am enjoying the conversation. Peace to you, Brother Rob, and peace to the two brothers, too.
Thanks, Brother John.
Thank you, brother, very much. I appreciate your information, and my, you know, but my point still remains the same. I don't care if it was one or 100 million; it was too many, and I just feel that this brother.
But that wasn't,
you know,
your point.
Yes, it was my point.
No, it wasn't your point.
Please.
Your point,
brother,
was that you.
Hold on. One second.
We can play
don't
the tape back and
what,
say. I know
you
what your point was. I heard what you said, Junior.
No, you don't know what my point is. You are not in my mind. That's like me saying I know what your points are.
I don't want to be in your mind based on what's coming out of your mouth. Hell no.
And believe me, the feeling is mutual. Believe me.
Y'all making me laugh too much, man. It's like a family picnic,
man. It wasn't no
Goodman.
Hold on a minute.
I heard you use the term.
Hey, see, I haven't heard it
out of your mouth. The only thing you've got good to say about black people is how you can exploit them.
Hey, see, hold on a minute. Man, relax a minute. Hold on. All right. Now let's go ahead and, you know, we can't talk over everybody. It's too much like a family picnic.
I was glad I was taught manners in public discussions when I was brought up.
Well, I'd be glad when you use them.
I don't see that.
You may have been taught them, but you have absolutely positively no situation where you're using any application of those manners, pal.
I thought this was a conversation and not a choir we indulge in ourselves in.
I thought it was
what's
a conversation instead of a monologue.
Chef Rob.
Okay, hold on again. I had to mute y'all for a minute. Y'all need to hold on. Slow down. There. Brother Jai, you still there?
Yes, sir. I am here.
You feel that passion?
I'm still here, Rob. I'm just listening in.
Okay. I got a new caller. Hey, is that my barber?
Yes, it is.
What'd you think of the conversation, man? I love their passion. I love it. Like I said, it's like a family picnic.
Yeah, I'm liking the conversation so far. I'm just listening in.
Good. Beautiful, beautiful.
It sounds a little heated, but yeah, like you said, you got a lot of passion.
Love that passion, you know. So, you know, I would love to go ahead and have this being played to a lot of the youth out here, so we can go ahead and see that we can have some kind of discussion. We need to go ahead and talk to one another.
Hey, Brother Rob, can I ask a question real quick?
Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, this is Brother John. I came in kind of late. The argument was going on already, so only thing I could really, you know, comprehend was, you know, the argument over the 100 mil. But what was the initial statement that caused the argument? I respect both the brothers. I'm definitely learn a lot from Elder Pianchi. But what exactly was the initial statement that is being debated here?
Okay,
is it just the 100 million?
Well, I'll explain what this is. I made the comment that how blacks fantasize about the number of Africans that was brought to this part of Americans being over 100 million. In the same way, you have some that say that Africans sold their people into chattel slavery when no place on the continent in the history of Africa was slavery ever used as a means of production, nor did they have no idea of what chattel slavery was. But the reason I asked AC if he ever been to Africa, if you go to the dungeons, the dungeon at St. John's in Cape Coast, they have cannons pointed out to the sea. Of course, depending on who controlled that dungeon, which was used as a holding, and they can only hold so many. They can't hold no 10,000 until they filled it up where they could load up a ship and send it off. They have cannons pointed to the sea because, you know, the British was there, then the Spanish would come along and try to take it from the British, and the Portuguese would try to take it from the Spanish. But they also have cannons pointed inland. And the question is, ain't no ships sailing on land, so why would they have cannons pointed inland? Well, they had cannons pointed inland because people was trying to get their loved ones out of them dungeons. So if they was trying to do that, how can you say that they was willingly selling their people off to this horrendous thing? Another point. There is some history that the brothers with Ascot had mentioned, and I haven't been able to verify this yet, but I don't doubt it, that some Africans willingly permitted themselves to go on the journey to find out what the hell's taking their people so long to come back.
Right. And your point is, how does that affect the argument that we were having about the number?
Listen, I explained to the gentleman what the nature of the conversation was, how it got to that point.
Okay, that was the nature of the conversation from your perspective. In order for a conversation to exist, there has to be at least two people involved. Now, would you like to hear what I have to say about how the argument got started?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Or does that have any significance at this point?
AC, I want to hear what you got to say. Get to it, bro.
The argument got started when the brothers tried to mitigate the slave trade by suggesting, ain't no 100 million slaves died in no crossing. And I quote, okay? When the brother said that, I said, okay, you question the numbers. Got no problem with that. And my question was, do you question the numbers of the 6 million Jews or the 20 million Russians? To which he had no response, to which he filibustered. So his problem is with black people. I mean, obviously, I mean, if we're talking about, I mean, because all of these other situations that I'm talking about, those people did quite well with the numbers that they put out there after the fact. So, you know, so why would you try to mitigate the black man's situation when you basically say, well, you don't have the problem with the Jews saying 6 million, although there are some people out there who do. To me, it's a you know, doesn't really matter. No matter how many they lost too many. And you don't have a problem with the other deaths that took place in that situation. You just have a problem with the slave trade, and that bothers me, especially coming from a black man. And I'm only assuming that you're black. At least I'm willing to admit when I make an assumption. Okay.
Okay,
all right,
we settled this part. He black. Okay.
Well, brother, can I just make a comment and ask a question to the brother AC? I think you said his name was,
sure.
If possible.
Sure.
You know, I actually disagree with the 100 million number. I also disagree with the Jewish number of 6 million. Most historians put it closer to around 1 or 2. Jewish people died in the Holocaust. But, you know, black people actually were murdered in the Holocaust, too. A lot of us, it's hardly ever spoken about. Very good book written about that. Hitler's black victims. My question would be, if you if it sounds like you subscribe to the 100 million number,
I see my thing is, look,
hold on, AC, let him ask his question. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, I thought his question was, do I subscribe to that number?
Well, no, I was just saying that it sounds like you do, but if you don't, that's fine too. But what are you basing that off of, the 100 million? I actually probably agree with Bianchi that there is a lot of emotionalism, and that's why we kind of cling to those numbers. I have her brothers mention that. Dr. Clark said 60 million. I've heard another brother say that Dr. Clark co-signed 100 million. I haven't heard him say it directly myself, but I have had people tell me that. But what are you basing that off of? Is it particular numbers from a particular organization or a research group that you're getting from?
I've heard numbers more than anything else.
Yes,
I've heard as many as 150 million. So,
yes, sir.
But, you know, like I said, there's no way, no way that anyone could possibly know. But like, that's why I made the statement. I don't care if it was one. And we know it wasn't one. You know, I don't care what the number is. I mean, I asked the brother, okay, what number of Africans dying in the slave trade would mitigate the slave trade to him? No answer. The exaggeration, the emotionalism, well, okay, what subject do you have in mind that this is a subject to me, obviously, that draws a great deal of emotion. Even at this point, as far as I'm concerned. But no, I don't have any specific numbers, and I don't have any specific numbers that I adhere to. But I do say it was too many.
Well, I agree with you on that.
The emotionalism and all of that other
stuff.
Well,
it is emotionalism, and as I said before,
but it's
based
not
on
out
the
of place, brother. And where are those manners that you keep talking about?
Because you keep talking over somebody, man.
I'm not. The brother asked me a question. I'm communicating with him. You're butting in, and I'm talking over someone?
Well, let us know when you're done, AC. How many minutes
you got?
I will,
definitely. And I tell you what, you do the same. When you finish your filibuster, let us know when you're done.
Well, I don't have any filibuster. First, we ain't nobody trying to achieve any political
agenda. Your whole conversation is a filibuster, pal.
Well, why you continue to talk to me? Go ahead and explain to the man. It seems like you got a problem with me, Junior.
No, I got problems with your point of view. I don't know you.
You got that right.
That's right. And I'm the first one. I at least I'll admit that, which is more than I can say for you.
Well, go ahead and finish explaining to the gentleman what it is that you was
if
trying
you
to get across.
If you hadn't interrupted this conversation, I
would have okay. Well, you're talking to me now. Talk to him.
No. Yeah, I'm talking to you because you butted in.
All it. For all those that's listening.
Hold on a minute. All right. Getting a little too far here now. Okay. Now show that love, okay? I know you two brothers got a lot of love for each other. Hold on a minute. Now, that question there, Brother AC. Get to that question. And Brother Pianchi,
like I said, I don't espouse any particular number. I don't know. Okay? And I understand, you know, I believe that, of course, there was an exaggeration in there. Of course, people got very emotional about that, just like there's an exaggeration in I would suggest that there's an exaggeration in the Jewish number, and Jewish people would get extremely emotional about that. And I would suggest that there was an exaggeration in the Russian number, and I'm sure the Russian people would get emotional about that. And I have no problem with their emotion. And like I said, I mean, some of their people died for absolutely positively no other reason but someone else's greed and someone else's vision. I got a problem with that. And whatever number it is, however many people, whatever floats your boat, 9 million would be too many, don't you think, Brother John?
Absolutely. I agree with you.
You know, that's my only point. That's my only point. And I just don't like, this brother is the one that sounds like he has a problem because, you know, if there's nothing, first of all, I think that black people are not emotional enough about what has happened to them in the past and what's happening to them right now. So as far as I'm concerned, a little emotion is exactly what's needed in this situation. you know. And if you have to reach back to slavery to grasp that emotion, to make you do better in the situation that we're in now, then so be it. And with that, I relinquish the mic.
Okay, Brother Pianki.
Well, I don't see where, as I said before, based on the infrastructure that was available at that time, it's nowhere impossible 100 million could have been brought over here. That's based on pure emotion and fantasizing.
So maybe roughly that amount has been affected.
Well,
that was
hey, brothers, Brother Rob, if you don't mind, if I can interject real quick.
Go ahead, brother. Hey, how you doing, Captain Hicks?
I've been listening to you know, both sides of the conversation, and I mean, Brother Pianki, what I can say is maybe perhaps if you looked at since the time of slavery, how many people have been affected and have died under the auspices of slavery. Who knows what the number could be, but it would definitely be high, definitely in the multiples of millions. What we can say and what we can document very accurately, though, is the black people that died today, the black people that died yesterday, last week, the babies that have been aborted also today. We can definitely document that. So when we take it from that perspective of, yes, well, okay, slavery, our ancestors went through something that was 10 times worse than the Holocaust. I had a conversation with an Israeli just the other day, a person leaving New York going back to Israel. And I told her right to her face, I said, the African Holocaust is 100 times more than what your Holocaust was. Now, when we start talking about with how slavery is affecting black folks today, you look at what's happening in Chicago right now. Black folks killing each other like they're 95 going south. Now, what are we going to do to prevent that, help us stop eliminating each other and start working together? And that's why we talk about nation building all the time. That example of some of us are going to need to step up, go find this unoccupied, undeveloped territory, build this nation so that we can set an example for those African Americans of what it means to work together. My grandfather always says to me that black people were better off during the days of segregation. And integration now, we've lost our power. Before, we had no choice but to have our own barbershops, butcher shops, we were on our own carpenters, blacksmiths, plumbers, electricians, everything. And now where are we today as a people? So irregardless of how many people came on a slave ship or what Dr. Clark said or what so-and-so said or how many bones we find down in the bottom of the ocean, we can never forget that. I'm not trying to denigrate that or put a damper on that. But the bottom line is black people have been killed today, either in the womb or they have been murdered by some of our own people. And what are we going to do to stop that? And that's where I want us to move forward. You know, fortunately today, I mean, I'm in a half-decent position, but I have my 13-year-old son today flying a plane. He was a Piper, what plane was that? Piper Warrior today. 13 years old, I said, let's go, boy, today. I scheduled a flight for him. Why? And flying, and I'm in that plane, and I keep looking across that water saying, God, I can't wait to just keep heading back to the east. And I said to my son today, and I always remind him, how lucky he is to be even have this opportunity. And what I'm saying to you, gentlemen, that's the kind of opportunities I want to see for all of our children. That's the kind of investment I'm trying to make. I'm trying to teach these kids, hey, my 13-year-old boy, for real, gentlemen, will take you up in a plane and fly you and land you safely in turbulence.
Mm-hmm. Any comments?
I like what the brother's saying, personally.
Interesting. Are you sure, man?
You know,
you okay?
Because no,
you were sick this week, man. You all right?
Well, David, you were here in St. Louis. How, you know, we used to have a black flying club here in St. Louis. Where was you at during that time? If I'd have known that
Brother Pianki, I'm sorry. I didn't know about that. Love the sciences. I know of a guy right now
I met a gentleman who, I didn't meet him personally, I knew of a guy online who was working at JPL right now. This is a white dude. And this guy told me about the gentleman who was running the Voyager. You know, Voyager is the first satellite that is humanity has launched. And brother, the project manager for that is a brother right now. And this white dude was telling me he couldn't believe how hardworking this one gentleman was. Right now, the guy that's running the Voyager project is an African-American man, and he says he's one of the best, brightest guys he's ever met in his life.
Well, you know, if you get your son to solo on a helicopter, I guess I'm sure he don't solo fixed wing if he's taking people up. If he solo a helicopter, too, he would have set the record, which was held by a 14-year-old black boy out in on the West Coast. Well, he soloed fixed and helicopter in the same day.
Yeah, brother, well, it costs a lot of money to do that. I don't think I'm going to help break that record. I would love to, but it
costs some dough, brother. When I learned how to fly, it was $400. Other than the wet hours, the wet time. But it does. It costs a lot of money now.
Yeah, it's like $200 an hour right now.
But you know that there's another economic adventure that we're not taking advantage of, and that's drones. A friend of mine started off with the Atari Jumbo Jet game. Next thing I knew, Al gave me my novice class, amateur extra class license, by the way. Next thing I knew, he was doing model planes, RC model planes. And next thing I knew, he had his, his Piper 180. And he went through his instrumentation. He got his instrument ratings. He'd take off in St. Louis and fly in the clouds of North Carolina, which takes a lot of guts to be able to do that. But the whole business of drones, there's only one institution in America, and I think it's a university out in the western part of the country. I don't know if it's Nebraska or one of the Dakotas, that teaches drone pilots. And that's something that's very easy to do. With simulators and the cameras and so forth. And we need to get more of our children involved in that particular application because it's going to be well needed in the upcoming future.
Sure, absolutely. And even then on building these drones, I mean, there's a huge...
Have a hit.
Hello?
I think Captain Hit dropped off.
You got a female out there trying to come in.
Hey, that's Sister Jackie. How you doing?
All right. No, I thought the car ended, so I was just saying hello.
No, that was... How was your weekend?
It was well. I'm upset with you.
Okay, we'll talk about that later.
Thanks for going to everyone.
Okay.
Then let me know. Do it soon
as sure. Who's that chiming in there? So what do you think about the conversation so far?
I'm trying to catch up.
Okay.
You know, I didn't know somebody was doing a show, so trying to catch up. Like they were having an argument over.
Oh, come
on. The snake trait.
Hey, I sent you some messages. I told you I was going to go ahead and do the other thing with the football helmet and the boots. And so I sent those out. Brother Pianchi.
Yes, sir.
This thing about these drones.
Mm-hmm.
What's the makeup? I mean, how do you put them together? I mean, you mentioned that. I heard you mention that before.
I said that there's going to be opportunities as far as occupation and also business in the line of drones. Utilities will use them in order to check their transmission lines rather than having people on the ground or using planes where rather than renting planes, you know, When you got to bring in a live power, the expenses are going to be much more. If you got a drone with the surveillance cameras on it, you can fly along your transmission lines from state to state to state, and it's a lot cheaper that way. You're going to have businesses that's going to be using drones for oceanic projects, checking this, checking that, checking the borders. So it's going to be a lot of business that's going to spur up from just people who have the capability of flying drones.
Hey, yeah, that sounds like it'll be something out there. Brother AC.
Brother's here.
You had some experience with communications, don't you?
Yes, that's what I was in the military for.
So, you know, how do you think you can go ahead and help us hook up the stuff to go ahead and build our own drones?
Well, I don't think that the federal government would think kindly of that right about now.
So what about all these other people I see by my neighborhood, man? They got all these planes, these miniature planes flying around. Ain't those drones?
Well, a drone is actually something a little bit larger than that.
You should see some of these things over here, man.
Huh?
You should see some of these things. They're pretty huge.
Yeah, they're probably quarter scale.
Yeah.
But see, drones is when you're in a remote location, when you may be miles away and you watching a screen, a monitor, and you talking about RC control, that's visual. You know, you're sitting there with a controller with two joysticks and a throttle control. That's controlling that plane by a radio frequency, which is limited to its output. So you can't, you can take that plane beyond a certain distance. You lose control of it and just keep on flying until it finally run out of fuel.
Mm-hmm. That's a bad visual.
But they do make those big, like I say, they do make them up to like a quarter scale.
Yeah, some of the ones I've seen over there pretty big.
Yeah, tow them on a trailer to the park. Where you at now? You said you're in Chicago, right?
Yeah, I live near Schaumburg.
Yeah, that's where I built that recreation center a long time
ago. That's also where I've seen them flying in big old planes in Schaumburg. It looked like over a big old marsh or something like that, man.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's why I say, you know, you don't know what they're flying out there. And I ain't seen no black people out there at all.
No, we don't tend to get our children involved in that stuff. We too busy studying a lot of other things rather than things that's very highly profitable, where we could leverage the special class that we achieved back in the 1960s. And it's just another avenue that's going unanswered.
Okay, so where would you start with that, you personally?
With the drone training?
No, just with the education. You know, talking about getting the kids involved. Where would you start with that?
Well, I would start that in school. With the early grades, I would start.
Could you do at home, right? What I'm saying.
Pardon me?
What would you do at home?
Oh, at home, I would expose my child as much as I possibly can. Exposing them to model plane building, if that's what you want, if that's what they got a knack at. I mean, you should take your children to air shows. You have air shows there where the Blue Angels and Thunderbirds perform in Chicago.
Okay, so
what they do down at Scott Air Force Base, which is about, 300 miles south of you?
But my point is, Brother Pianca, what kind of education altogether? What would be the first thing you do at home?
Well, education is different than skills. And I always say that our children need to be educated within their own cultural realms. And the education should be nationalistic so that they would understand what it is they should use those skills for and for whose good as much as they possibly can. Of course, it's not going to be something that's going to occur 100%. We have the necessary facilities. We have the schools that does an outstanding job. They need to be improved on. You don't have to duplicate a curriculum that comes out of Australia. You don't have to duplicate something that France is doing. You have your own people that's doing wonderful jobs as far as educating our African-American children. And everything that they need to know to graduate at the 12th grade, they should have attained it by the 6th grade. And I'm not saying this as a fantasize. I can actually point to children that's doing it. Matter of fact, I was in one school where I videotaped for over a week. I had to go up and touch these children to make sure they was live. And they weren't mannequins. They were real live black children.
Okay.
And then the skills should be specific. They should be looked at what it is that you want to control. You know, as I told you before, we need to be competing against white supremacy. Leave racism alone. Racism ain't no problem of ours. It's the white supremacist fact that they want to control everything that you consume. You got to compete with them. They're already working out of a pie. When you look at that pie, they got somebody's name on it. That pie could be representative of an industry, from everything to building cranes that's going to be used in ports, which the Chinese are now starting to control. Well, if you got that expertise and you should be going into that business competing against those that you're working for, well, you're going to have to cut out a piece of that pie. They're not going to give it to you. You got to take it from them. And that's how you get it. You take it from them, you're very successful at it, then respect will come. Then you can hire your own children.
Brother AC, how you feel about that?
I'm just listening to the brother. I've heard it before.
Oh, my goodness. What, nothing else that you can agree with that?
Huh?
What, nothing else you can agree with that?
That's his plan. It's the way he wants to do things, you know. He's entitled to his opinion. That's what this show is about.
Okay, so what do you agree with about Captain Hitch's plan?
Huh?
What Captain Hitch came on without?
We're talking about his son flying and all of that. That's all fine and good, you know.
When he was talking about getting nation building his own nation.
It's been tried. It didn't work. So I wish him luck with that, of course. You're talking about building a nation in a world in a country that doesn't want you to build a nation. That's going to present a certain amount of problems that I don't think the brother is really ready to deal with. The only answer to those problems, I see as being problematic. So, but you know, if that's the way the brothers want to handle things, then obviously there's some merit to that.
So you don't think they're going ahead and reviewing your mistakes?
Pardon?
You don't think they're reviewing your mistakes, going ahead and looking at that history and going ahead and trying to correct some of those mistakes to go ahead and make this whole thing possible?
Well, you act as if you're operating in a vacuum. Yeah, you know, I mean, there are going to be people trying to stop you from doing this. You know, I mean, you know, your best laid plans are going to be people trying to stop you from doing it, so... You know, you don't want to take that into consideration at least?
I take that into consideration. Try to look at all the options.
Oh, okay. Well, when you're looking at all of the options, pardon?
But we all agree that there is something that, you know, we must do, and we must go ahead and dialogue about that, man. History plays a real important part in that. You can't know where you're going until you know where you came from.
Okay, so on that note, then, what happens when someone questions the history? Huh?
What do you mean?
When someone doesn't believe the history to be true, authentic, necessary.
What do they have to put up against? What do they
have
to put up against? I mean, well, you know, if you got opposition to what's being said, what do you have to put up against it? And
right.
Based off what you already know, I mean, you should be ahead of the game anyway. You can go ahead and shut my position if you already know something, and you already seen that, hey, it is pretty accurate, and that other individuals will put out information and their stuff is pretty accurate, then it should be a little bit easier, don't you think?
No, I don't agree with that. I don't think there's going to be anything easy about this situation whatsoever, regardless of how many times someone suggests that you can do this and you can do that and the situation's going to be resolved. I mean,
I don't mean it'd be easy. I mean, it should be, I don't mean easy. I mean, my thing is that it'd take a lot of that stress off trying to go ahead and get this situation accomplished. You know, it's, the ball has to get Merlin moving.
Okay, but, you know, the ball, like I said, my problem with that situation is the ball that I keep hearing about getting moved is the same old ball that's in existence now. You're talking about it being run by someone different. I don't see that being beneficial. You're talking about replacing one people in this situation with another people. I don't see that being beneficial. No, I see that as perpetuating the same system that's in existence now, personally. But I thought I made that clear. I mean, you know, all of the financial talk and all of the benefits that's going to come, you know, from becoming involved, more deeply involved in this situation. If that's the way you see it, then you're entitled to that. But I personally, I don't see it happening that way. I don't. You know, the difference of opinion there.
That's good. Right. Okay, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
That's your. Anybody else want to chime in on that?
I don't see nation building here. I don't see the point in that. It seems like we should be focused on something else. I'm with that too. I don't see them letting it be done. I mean, if you could point to them as the enemy, why would they let you build up to their status on their turf?
I see that as a wasted talk as well.
Okay.
Well, black people, African Americans could carve out of any industry, or practically any industry that's going on here in the United States, however much they want to if they put their mind to it. And we got brothers here that's building 20-story apartments, buildings at Robertsburg, control 3 cold blocks in downtown St. Louis. Most blacks in other parts of the country don't do just that. They own resorts down in Bahamas. Let's say Bermuda, Bahamas. Down the schools I was talking about, blacks are doing that in West Palm Beach, Florida. They have a maritime school where black children are learning how to operate and run ports. One of the world's largest yacht builders is providing the technical aspects of that school as far as a marine diesel engine repairs, shipbuilding, and so on and so on and so on. So
that's different than trying to take over a country.
Well, I don't think Mr. Hyde is about taking over a country. I don't think he's talking about that. Ain't nobody going to let you come in and take over their country unless you got a lot of weapons, but that wouldn't work very well anyway. But what he's talking about is that the land that's available in some countries that, you know, a group of people, if that's what they so desire, could pull that off. Kuwait was started like that not too long ago. Look at Southern Sudan. I mean, there's much examples of what he's talking about that have happened just even recently. It just takes a mindset of people that want to envision that and put it together. It's not for everybody.
We're talking about people here in this country who don't even have a mindset to come together. Most people that are running their own businesses, they can't even agree to come together with other business leaders. So I just don't see it as something.
You don't see what?
I'm sorry. I don't see it as something that we as people here in America are going to do, going to come and take over this country for our own financial benefit. I mean, not the way.
Yeah, it's hard, but, you know, it's not from outside. Well, that girl drove up today, she's about to fuck that car. I seen her. Got all close to the car and I said, hey,
what
hey,
kind
hey,
of manner is that, Jeff?
No, no, that was me. I opened somebody's lineup. That was me.
Oh, okay.
I opened somebody's lineup. I thought he wanted to say something. Brother AC.
Yeah.
So what did you have to say? Well, you got any comments?
I was listening to the sister, you know. She makes sense.
Okay. You've been a little bit quiet lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just trying to show it can be done.
Okay. I'm trying to see what
you know. I know of a young black lady here that was in commercial construction even before I got in as a business. Dory. We both work in the same industry. The only thing is she was specializing in concrete reinforcement and I in structural steel. But she had been doing that for a long time. I would say at least like the early 90s. And I think she's still in business. But people, once they put their mind to get to, a black person put their mind to do something, they can do it. There's nobody stopping you, standing over you with a gun, saying you're not going to do that and do this and so on and so on. Everything is not going to work the way it's supposed to. You have to have the due diligence and you have to have the wherewithal to put in the necessary time that it takes.
Okay. So
you know what? In a black community, is more chalk than do. Anybody, anywhere can get anything done once they put their mind to it and stay committed.
Well, that's not always true. I can name a lot of black people, young blacks, that's doing some marvelous things. What I like to talk to some is tell them about the what I call, quote-unquote, out-of-the-box industry, out-of-the-box projects, out-of-the-box endeavors that we need to be participating in. And we have done it in the past, whether it was oil, whether it was minerals, mining, of course, agriculture, trade.
Well, anybody anywhere can get anything they want accomplished as long as they stick to it and keep their mind on the go. I don't think that's something special that black people possess or don't possess. I think that's anybody anywhere.
Well, yeah, but what we was talking about earlier is that the ability of them controlling, and I use the word exploiting, the consumptive habits that they have in these mega population areas, your Atlanta's, your Jackson, Mississippi, your Memphis, Tennessee, so on and so on and so on. And believe it or not, you're going to do it whether you want to or not, because the way conditions are, and actually times now are better than I've seen them in a long time. Now is the time to make those moves. Times are good for black Americans to get off the wagon of working for somebody and start having more control over your own community, your own economics in your own community.
Well, I think they need to know how to do that first.
Well, they do. I can give you examples of what's going on already.
Where?
It's just not
on the whole, that's just not what I see. I'm sorry.
Where are they going on, brother?
Everybody don't have the intelligence to be a business.
Well, look at Claude Anderson and what he's doing in the production of fish out in Maryland. Look at Will Allen, what he's doing in not only Milwaukee, but other cities he have the models set up. People come from all over the world and observe his models of hydroponic farming and also urban agriculture, urban gardening.
I'm just being honest. I just don't see everybody owning a business. Everybody don't have what it takes to be a business owner.
Well, you don't have
some
to.
People don't even have basic people skills to deal with people on a regular, everyday basis.
Well, everybody
not only that, but to be able to manage other people. I mean, I think it's just a false hope to say, well, all black people need to be business owners, when in actuality, somebody got to work at these businesses.
Well, you know, everyone don't have to be a business owner, but we should have more businesses that's controlling what it is that you spend your money on. And
you know what? And some people said that, too, about us being homeowners. And that just devastated our communities, really.
What, being homeowners?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being homeowners if you build your own homes.
Yeah, nothing wrong with being a homeowner either. If you got the skills, you know how to manage your money, you know how to pay your bills on time, you know what you're getting into. A lot of people, they sign onto mortgages and stuff, they had no idea what they were getting into. And then they fell in love with the title of homeowner rather than, I need to back off and get my finances together. I need to back off and reevaluate what I signed.
Well,
now look,
I'm
a lot of black people that lost their homes.
I wasn't.
Somebody did something to them, but it was really them not knowing what they were getting into.
Well, you know, me personally, I wouldn't get into the discussion of what people got caught up in the economic downfall that we have. And also, if I was going to sit down at the table with Chef Rob and some others, I'm sure that they all would, at least by that point in time that they sit down, understand how to balance a checkbook.
Yeah.
How many people do you interact with daily that doesn't, though? That's my point.
Oh, okay.
Hey, my barber, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I got you. I didn't hear from you for a minute. So
yeah. Go ahead, my fault.
No, go ahead. I wanted to hear from you.
I agree with the lady on the subject. I don't really think that they would allow for us to be that self-sufficient. Like a prime example was Black Wall Street, where most blacks were self-sufficient, and you know, they kind of blew that right out of the water the first chance they got. So I don't really see it happening here on this. On their own land, now, but I mean, I know it's people doing some great things, and that's all good. But I think the moment we become too self-sufficient, they get threatened, and their history repeats itself. You know, so.
Chef Rob, can I add something?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
This is Denver, and I was just adding that with the Black Wall Street situation, the brother is right. But the problem with Black Wall Street wasn't so much that the white folks did that to us. Is that we didn't come from across the country and whoop that ass so they'd never do it again.
Now, the brother's talking my language. See, that's going to get you in trouble, brother, talking about whooping some ass. Because when you start talking about whooping ass, you fucking with Bianchi's money. So, like I said, that's my point. Right.
Okay, continue, brother.
Well, for the record, whoever AC was talking about, that was something he said. I never said that. So that's some more of that emotional stuff again.
Okay, brother from Denver, go ahead. Finish your thought.
All right, that was it. It's just on that because I came in kind of late. I have a group on Tuesday nights, and I'm always late on the show on Tuesday. So I had just started listening for about 10 minutes. But that's why I wanted to comment on that brother's last comment.
All right. Hey, Brother John, you still there?
Yeah, bro. I got knocked off for a minute, but I'm back on. Could I make a comment?
Yeah, I want to hear you, brother. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Specifically on the Black Wall Street, on the comment about us not going and kicking some ass. That was a... the history of that is actually very, very important and significant. That was actually the first time in the known history of the world that a government dropped a bomb on its own country. That was the first time it happened. It's actually happened two times. The second time, they actually did it to black people again. The MOVE group in from Philadelphia. Yeah, I think they're from Philly, but the MOVE organization was the second time it happened. And so now the Black Wall Street is very, very important because it was so significant because it actually rivaled the White Wall Street. And so it does show that black people can do whatever we want to do if we come together and pool our money and resources. So it's very important to know that. However, it's also to the point of nation building. I think the brother AC made an important point that African Americans going over to Africa trying to build a nation. Yeah, African Americans going over to Africa trying to build a nation has been done before, and it failed. So it's important for us to learn from our mistakes. However, it still is very important that we go over there and build nations. I don't know necessarily if we need to build an African American nation over there. I think there are more than enough nations over there. We should really be trying to build up the existing nations. For example, you know, South Africa has been begging African Americans to come over there for years and bring their talents and their resources to help build up. I know Emperor Haile Selassie for a long time was offering free land to African Americans to come over there and build. He would give you free land to build on yourself. And so, and there,
yeah,
other countries.
The dude that was prejudiced. He didn't like black people, though, right?
That's absolutely not true.
Right.
A lot of propaganda put out on.
Right or not right? Somebody said right. Somebody said not right.
If you judge by the Ethiopians here in America, they do not like your ass at all.
I don't have no problem with Ethiopia here. But here's the point. During World War II, when Ethiopia was fighting fascist Mussolini, you had blacks that was trying to go inscript themselves in the Ethiopian army. You had Hubert Julian, who would fly in Marcus Garvey parade, do a lot of barnstorming. Even blacks was building their planes back during that time. They had airplane manufacturing going on at that time. Hubert Julian went to Ethiopia and helped them form their Air Force. So, no, that's not true about Haile Selassie.
That's a lot of
problems.
He did go to Jamaica and treated the Jamaican black people really bad, right? True or not?
No, that's not true. That's not true, sir.
That's not true?
That's not true at all. It's a lot of
As a matter of fact, the Rastafarians in Jamaica worship Haile Selassie as a god figure, or at least a prophet.
We're not going to go there. That means
the lion of Judah is the Lion of Judah is Haile Selassie. So when you hear the Rastafarian brothers speak, they're speaking about Haile Selassie. So.
Yeah, and in the 20s,
we did have a movement of Ethiopianism where the black people in America were highly supportive of Ethiopia's independence. And so we did have a movement in history where that did work. And the other thing is, too, we do have the capacity to defend what we build. If we only look at the Seminole Wars, the first one and the second one, we sustained a war for over 100 years.
Yeah,
over
we could
200 years.
And we could build a navy too, because AC has spent a lot of time in the United States Navy.
It was always my intention to be the spook who sat by the door, so I wouldn't have a problem with that.
You know, we had another brother too. Daniel, is that you who spent all that time working on United States aircraft carriers on the flight deck? No, you Rob. It was Daniel. I talked to so many young people. There's a young brother that spent like 20 years on a U.S. aircraft carrier on the flight deck, also maintaining their jets. The F-16, F-18, Hornets, and so on and so on. Here in St. Louis, we have a brother that's a submarine captain, and there's another brother who's in charge of all the maintenance that goes on United States vessels. It has to go through him first. So blacks have all the skills and talents that they need to change their situation around.
I Absolutely.
And I, and, you know, I might get some disagreement. I might get some disagreement, but I know for a fact that we would be far more productive if we lost that Christian sensibility.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it would be. I agree with you, but I tell you what, I wouldn't waste no time trying to do that because that'd be just a whole nother distraction.
Right.
I agree with that.
The reason I state that is because if you really look at the issues in business, the issues in community building, you can't trust somebody with a Christian sensibility. You really can't.
Could I make a comment on that?
And they'll go in any direction that the money goes.
Could I comment on that? I'm attempting to be a counter-racist scientist. I follow Mr. Neely Fuller Jr.'s compensatory code, as well as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing's additions. They classify religion as a people activity. It's just something that people do. We don't identify religion of any kind as the problem. We identify white people as the problem. So, you know, religion is just something that people do. I agree with you that it's problematic because, you know, we could classify Christianity as a white person's religion. But, you know, people are just going to do what they want to do, you know. It's something that gives people meaning to their life. So, you know, in most cases, especially with black people, all we got is religion. So when you're trying to take away the last thing people got, usually they're going to fight you. So
unless you can replace it with something else.
But the problem is this. Our sensibility, this is why I chose that word specifically, our Christian sensibility will not allow what you're talking about.
Well, you know, I'm going to disagree with that, brother, because and respectfully, because if you can look back in the 60s and the 70s, it was black churches that had the economics going on. Look at what Leon Sullivan had coming out of Philadelphia with that organization that he created.
I understand, and it started to work. It started to work, but it ultimately failed. And that's
It worked for a long
time. And you know why it failed? Because
the
principles that they live by, they want to help everybody, but when it's time for them to get help, nobody comes to help. And
it's contradictory.
To ignore their own to help people that don't care. Like now, you got all these black people, they running out to help the Hispanic community. But the Hispanic community says, we don't need your help. We outnumber you. We have more resources than you.
That's your politician.
The Ethiopians in Colorado have partnered with the Mexicans and the Italians, not the black people.
Well, my only concern about eliminating what the religious, I forget the term that you use, my concern would be religious sensibility, okay? My concern would be after a successful campaign doing what it is that I would want done, i.e. ending this situation as we know it, I would be concerned about a loss of a moral compass after we seized power. After you've been downtrodden for an extended period of time, it's quite easy for you to become extremely brutal. So that would be my only concern about a situation like that.
And I agree with you, but the problem is the brutality will come from that Christian sensibility. I think the term needs to be further explored before we make any judgments on it, because I know I'm accurate.
What you're saying is that if we were to, the very thought sends chills up my spine. If we were to seize power, in a successful revolt, for lack of a better word, that the Christian sensibilities would lead to the violence that I'm concerned about?
Exactly.
Okay.
If I could just make a quick example, I would use the conscious community currently, which most of us are not Christians, and we are still very disrespectful to each other, still very brutal with each other. So, and most of us don't have Christianity as religion, so I don't really see religion as the problem. I think it's our lack of respect. I think it's our lack of respect for each other.
Don't mean that the indoctrination of it don't claim you and rule things about you.
Thank you, sister, because the problem is the Christian sensibility
permeates all of our community, even the conscious community, because we were raised in it. It's the thought process of contradictory actions and feelings.
My brother, I'm Nigerian. My father's Nigerian from Lagos, Nigeria. I know many Africans who don't practice any Abrahamic religion, not even any monotheistic religion, that are very they have a lot of conflict between each other. So I think, you know, that's something we work out at another time, you know.
But you can't,
I just
you can't
don't think it's the most important issue.
You say you're from Nigeria.
And you may be from Nigeria and see those things. The problem is you can't take away the Christian colonization process that put them in that position.
I'm not saying that the religion has not been problematic. I'm just saying it's not the most important problem. It's not the first thing we need to worry about. That's something we can work out a little later.
It is for us in America. It may be different in Nigeria because it's majority black people. But here in the United States, the Christian sensibility is our number one problem.
Well, I think as the elder was saying earlier, you know, we've had a lot of evidence that a lot has gotten done through Christians. I think that's true, you know. So it's not really the religion. It's about what we're doing as a people, you know.
Can I ask you a question?
I agree. Go on ahead. Ask the question, brother.
I want to ask the question is, what were the goals of those Christians that were successful, and how successful was it, really?
It was the preaching that came from the pulpit. Well, the message was for saving for a rainy day, learning to read and write, and getting an education, finally, or making a job, working hard, supporting the family, raising the children, teaching them to work hard. And it was highly successful back at that time. I mean, for instance, I was talking about, let me give you this numbers on what Sullivan did. Sullivan had this organization coming out of Philadelphia that was called Opportunities Industrial Nation Center of America, where they was in 160 cities, and they trained over 700,000 people and placed them in jobs in the 1980s, late 70s and 80s. Obama would be happy to get 700,000 people hired today.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Black Wall Street too was ran by a lot of Christians, so, you know.
But it wasn't just only Christians, but it was also the mutual aid, and guess what else? The fraternal lodges. A whole lot came out of the fraternal lodges.
The difference now is the 501c3 law. You cannot speak out against any government, nothing, or you will lose your money.
Well, you're right about that. The preachers today is totally, church ain't worth what it was then. Back
right.
Then.
And that's what shifted, is that 501c3 law shifted all the potential for us to break out of the Christian sensibility. Because when we start doing the work of community building, that will fall to the wayside if we weren't restricted like that.
Well, I think the problem actually was integration, like a brother had mentioned earlier. Professor Manu Hampton wrote this in one of his articles. He said the way black people got into this situation was from migration, urbanization, and integration is how we got into this situation. I think that's very true. And so, you know, I think those are things we really need to focus on. But, you know, I do agree that, you know, religion is devil. I'm not a Christian myself, so I ain't sending no damn to the church. But I understand what you're saying, brother, but I just don't think that is a big problem.
The community we were trying to integrate into was a Christian nation. So you never escape what I'm saying.
Hold on a minute. Let me ask a question real quick. It was about that, what you just said, brother. Man, my mic was muted. Brother Kometu, what was your point, man? Because I kind of got lost with that, man.
I'm saying that when you deal with the Christian sensibility, you cannot trust the person who holds it. And I'm saying this for family members that we all know.
Okay.
This ain't even got to go to a national level. We can talk to the people in our family that's Christian. Totally nonsensical.
Okay, you something else you said that I wanted to go ahead and say something about. The when you got the 501c3,
you're not directly beholden to the government. If you go ahead and accept some of that grant money, then you got to go under their terms.
Well,
but see, there's a lot of
things.
Out here, the nonprofit got the term nonprofit, and they go ahead. They look at the American Chamber of America, whatever it is.
The National Black United Front is a 501(c) company, organization, and they talk all kind of stuff about the United States government.
Right. See, because it's once you take that money. If you take some of that money, well, that one of those stipulations can be that you can't say nothing about them.
And see,
if you ain't taking
the
money, you can go ahead the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
But the problem is we don't even listen to the white folks that write in their books. From the time of slavery up until now, there was a book called Tom Tom that was written by a white man in Suriname. And he said until the black man has his own gods, his own religion, his own spiritual system, and his own thought process, he will never be free of white people.
Yeah, but here's the point. You're not going to take what black folks have today away from them and don't have something to exchange it with. That ain't going to happen.
I agree. The first step would be to let them understand that they don't have shit, not even the religion, because they didn't make it.
Yeah, but why would you waste the time getting that kind of argument? People that believe in Jesus got to eat. They got to brush their teeth. They're going to need toothbrushes, toothpaste. They're going to need underwear. They're going to need socks. The church is going to have pews. The choir is going to have choir robes and hymns. And we just want to supply all the stuff that we consume, whether they're Christians, Muslims, or atheists, or whatever.
But what Christians don't have is self-control.
What, you mean they're going to run up and down the street butt naked?
No, they're going to turn and use their contradictory theology to take your shit.
Mm-hmm. Brother, come on now.
Just like their parent nation, the United States, which is a Christian nation. That's all we know.
Okay.
Well, you know, there's been, you know, great Christians. I mean, Dr. Chancellor Williams was a Christian, but, you know, he taught black history and wrote one of the greatest black books ever on our history, you know. So, you know, there are Christians, you know. I mean, you know, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was a Christian, but it's probably about, you know.
But there are limits to a Christian. I think y'all confusing the Christian sensibility with the religion. There are limits to anyone who is Christian and their credibility in dealing with history. The two never mix. But a Christian will try to mix the history with the Christianity. And that's where we go wrong every single time.
Well, there's some truth in that. You know, I can't really argue that, brother. But I'm just saying that it's not the biggest problem. You know, I agree with you to a point. But after a while, like the elder was saying, you know, it's really about, you know, what do you control? Do you have power? We can convert all black people to the blackest African, most indigenous religion in the world, and all our problems we still have are still going to be there. And so that I think that's what the brother's talking about. You know, it's really about control of your community. You know,
what I'm talking about is the control of your mind, because you have no hope of controlling your community if the minds of your people is taken by someone foreign.
Well, there's some truth in that, you know. Like I said, there's some truth in that, brother. I'm not disagreeing with you totally. I'm just saying that's a lot of work, you know. It's a lot more stuff we could do instead of trying to tackle that big task. I mean, I don't know how many Christians you done tried to convert to something else, but that's some of the hardest shit in the world, especially black folks who love white Jesus. I mean, that's a headache, bro.
You don't need to convert them. You need to teach them how to think, because if you get rid of that Christian sensibility, you will free up the thought process.
I remember a brother that was kind of successful in converting Christians to another point of view, for lack of a better term. They wound up assassinating him for doing that stuff. So there's always that.
Which shows you the threat of leaving Christianity. White folks have not moved on us because we're Christians.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
I mean,
you know, the British tried in the Igbo land too. It didn't work. They say they had a people as a whole was impossible to rule, and the women were rebellious as hell. That was in 1929, even though Christianity entered Igbo land back in 1841 in the Delta region. So people take on things for whatever particular reason they take them on. You know, people don't remember what you say to them or what you do to them. They remember how you make them feel.
That is so true.
I had
Can y'all agree that Christianity is the biggest feel good, keep your mind on nothing type of theology?
It's a waste of time, I would say. But like I said before, I wouldn't try to take it from nobody.
That's my point. And my angle is freeing up the mind so that thine ass shall follow. You can't free up the ass and think the mind don't follow.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I know it's a daunting path. I know it's daunting, and I'm not taking light of that. I know it's daunting. But I'm going to tell you, that's the problem.
Well, you know, Nat Turner was a Christian, and he killed a lot of white folks, you know. So people can still be trapped in that mind frame, which I agree with you is not the best, but can still do the right thing, you know, cutting white throats.
And as a result, he trusted the wrong people, and look what happened.
Exactly.
Wonder what made him do that.
Well, it wasn't.
His judgment was clouded, and you can't deny it. That's probably the reason why his judgment was clouded.
No,
why he didn't succeed. That's why he didn't succeed ultimately. Because the
incorrect. That's incorrect. He did not succeed because he was unable to communicate with other slave plantations. It wasn't a situation of trusting the wrong people or the right
people.
They have it that
the people that he was running with, they were robbing him left and right. He trusted these people.
And they
told
on him.
Well, that's a different issue. That's not a situation, and that's not actually accurate, by the way, but that's a separate issue of who's in your circle. That's not really religion.
Yeah,
but,
you ain't
got to
worry about nobody telling on you today, because when you go to start your building, you fill out the paperwork, they already know all the things you're gonna,
right.
that you need to know about you. So why are we worrying about what Nat Turner was lacking back in them times? Are we talking about today? And as I said before, from my experience, right now and maybe in the next, you know, near future is the best time for African Americans to make their move. And the sad thing about it, you're either going to do or you're going to die. I mean, there's no stopping an idea whose time has come. And that's exactly what you're seeing going on in the Western world. It's being a large shift in power, a large shift in world control, especially in markets. And when that big giant falls to the ground and breaks up into little pieces, then those who never had opportunity in the past or who were stopped by whatever reason means, now they have a chance to pick up a piece and make something of it.
And, you know, if this stuff falls apart, I ain't going to trust no Christian, no Muslim, or nobody to trust white people.
Well, you got to work with everybody. You got to work with white folks too, man.
Yeah, we're not going to be able
wrong.
To. We're not going to be able to work with white folks when the shit falls.
Sure,
they ain't going to work with you.
Oh, sure, you will be able to. Look at the Amish. The Amish is. I really have respect for what they do.
But they're white.
Yes, they white.
And the Amish ways are Christian. That's a part of the Christian sensibility. Any denomination of Christianity is still a Christian.
Yeah, you know, you can take your, you can go to Russia and learn skills. It's what you do with them. I wouldn't go to an Amish compound and say I want to take their wives or sleep up with their daughters. I just want to learn some specific things that they do very well, so that I can even duplicate them.
Would a Christian do that?
You wouldn't, but a Christian would go and marry that white woman. I know too many of them that did it.
Yeah, man, now you're really taking this conversation into a whole different realm.
It's the same realm. It's the Christian sensibility, and it's deeper than the religion and the theology. It's the thought process. It cannot be trusted.
I know people who raised up in indigenous African cultures and practice indigenous African religions their whole life who do the same thing. So,
yeah, you can't trust them neither.
Right.
That might be the case. That's another issue.
Well, I think it's the same issue. It's just, you know, it's religion. You know, there's nothing you can really do about it.
Like I said earlier, you agree with the colonization process that puts them in that position today was Christian.
Well, I agree insofar as one of the worst things that happened to us was that our God became white. I agree with you, and we use religious practice, European practices. I think that is true. But, you know, I don't think it just applies to Abrahamic religions. You know, it comes down to the individual. I know Christians who hate white people, and I know Africans who practice indigenous religions who love white people. So it's a case by case situation.
Christians that hate white folks is lying because they believe in Jesus, and he white, so that's a lie.
Well, you know what, Kevin? In your town, I don't know what the major intersection is. If they said that Jesus was going to be there next Wednesday at 9 o'clock, all those ready to go to heaven, come on. Black folks wouldn't show up. Negroes would be standing all across the street watching, seeing what's going to happen.
I don't know if you've been to Denver, but a lot of Negroes would be right there.
Yeah, right. Well, I tell you what. I'm willing to bet you Negroes would not show up to leave to go someplace with somebody say they Jesus.
So you have a problem with the skepticism under the circumstances that we've been existing in all of this time? You have a problem with them being skeptical about someone telling them that something's going to happen at a certain time and not wanting to be involved in that situation?
No, I'm saying it could be the real Jesus. That's going to float off in a cloud. Blacks ain't going. You might have a few, but the majority of them is going to stay right here. I tell you another thing, too. What's today? Today is Tuesday. Come Thursday, if blacks was to wake up Thursday morning and was no white folks nowhere in America, you talking about a chaotic situation.
And why? Why would it be chaotic? And
all out in the flow.
I'd like to hear him answer the question. Why would it be chaotic?
Because they depend too much on government at this point. So I'm going to call it government. I ain't going to say white folks. I'm saying they depend too much on government for too much stuff. As I was telling somebody the other day, that the white man takes care of your children and the baby's mama. If you try to bother
that
baby mama, if you try to bother that baby mama, she would call the white police officer to kick your butt to keep you from doing that. So that's
Ice Cube said that on his rap tape too. That he's taking the brother's car, give me them car keys, nigga. He said, that's all right, Jesus give me another one. I think y'all missing the point on the sensibility part.
Hello?
The sensibility is a thought process. It's not the theology.
Well, you got to put something else in their head.
I do agree with that. And that's difficult. I agree with that, too.
That has to start with the schooling, right? With the children.
Right. And I talked about that on the show last time with the three nigger factories that produced that stupid Christian sensibility. That's school, that's church, and the prison.
That's why it's best to educate your own children. What you're talking about is not going to be done in no public schools, so you got to get them out of them public schools. Not saying that all public schools are bad.
They're all bad.
Well, no, some of them are good. I can name some that's doing some good jobs. But
they still teach the Columbia. They still teach about Columbia.
I don't know why every time we can name some, it's like the exception to the rule. The rule don't matter because you can name some.
Well,
no.
the problem is that we like to duplicate what don't work rather than duplicating what does work.
But we don't even know what works because we're so stuck in that mentality of that sensibility.
Well, no, everybody's not stuck in that type of mentality.
The behavior shows that we are.
And I'm saying that if they are, I mean, if you want to spend time trying to convert people and coerce folks, go ahead. I don't. Because you
don't
have.
I don't want to coerce them. I don't want to coerce them or convince them. I want to help educate them for real.
Well, that's going to be hard to do because we don't control the schools.
I agree. And that's a good place to start, is to control our own learning institutions and X that nonsense out of it.
Right. And when we do have our own learning. When we do have our own learning situation, you can't have the teachers there on welfare trying to work in the schools getting paid by cash. So we got to have the economy where the people can pay to support the schools.
When I was a kid and I went to school, I was like three or four grades ahead of my brother. Every day I came home from school, whatever I learned in school, he learned in school. My brother skipped fifth grade. My brother skipped eighth grade. My brother got a high school diploma, and he probably went to high school 3-4 times. You can teach
your
kids at home. It is no excuse that with the public education system, it don't work, so your kid's going to be dumb. No. If you think your kid's going to be dumb, then teach them at home. They can still go to school and still learn at home.
See, what we don't understand is the history of public school. It got started on us in Louisiana. And what we did prior to that is we educated our own people. And whoever learned how to read taught everybody how to read. And that's what we're lacking is we replaced the love for each other that made us do that with money and needing to get paid.
Oh, don't speak so ill of money, man. You know the brother don't like that.
Oh, no, money is a good thing.
Wait. I'm not speaking ill of money. It just can't be the driving force.
Only black folks is the ones that say money is the root of all evil, and the one that have the least of any. If you got, don't have no money.
I think the quote is the love of money is the root of all evil, which puts you in very dangerous ground, my brother.
Well,
we got a lot of Christian, thugs out here robbing people. So go figure.
Yeah. No, you got to have money as a tool to get things done.
I think you can love money all you want. It's your ego. The ego is the root to all evil.
But see,
people just want money to make people envy them.
And where we go wrong, we don't put the plan together. We don't put the plan together, then see how much it costs in order to put the plan into effect. We come up with the excuse, oh, we ain't got enough money, and don't go no further. We just stuck right there.
And I agree with you, Pianti, that the money is a tool. But we sleep with our tool. We try to screw them. And again, that's that Christian sensibility that makes us do that.
But that brother said he was an Igbo. Is that, what's your name?
Brother Ja,
part of my name is Bankali, Akin Wale. I guess you know what that means. My birth certificate name, too. But have you been over to Lagos lately?
No, sir. Not since I was a young man.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how Eco-Atlantic Project is coming along. That governor in Lagos is an outstanding person, man. The things that he's trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. A lot of good things going on over there. A lot of that comes from the oil money. There's still a lot of corruption over there that got to get under control, but, you know, that's everywhere. But, you know, yeah, absolutely. A lot of good things going over there. Yes, sir.
And I would just add this, that the earlier history of the Igbo, they were in cahoots with the Dahomey and selling niggas to America.
Well, I tell you what,
a lot of their problems.
Yeah.
I'm just saying a lot of their problems start
before this current era.
Black people did not sell each other into slavery, man. That's a myth, bro.
Not on the mass level that they purport, but it is documented by them that they did.
Well, there was some small participation, that is true. You know, usually those people were usually enslaved themselves or subservient to some European power. So I opt
to blame on the white. Wait, to the Christian sensibility, back to what I said.
But, you know, even before that, you know, you had the East African slave trade with Muslims, what we call the Eastern Maafa. So, you know, it's not just all Christians, but I would agree if you say Abrahamic religion.
Now, do you know the historical origin of Islam?
Yes, sir.
It's Christian.
Well, it's not all Christian.
So they're included in the Christian sensibility.
Well,
that's why the Nation of Islam ain't worse.
The historical origin of Islam is Christian?
Yes, it is.
That's not entirely accurate. That
is entirely accurate.
And you let me just
finish my statement. You have, in the origin of Islam, you have Christianity, Judaism, of course, but you also have Zoroastrianism, you have Sabianism, you have a lot of other things that played a part within Islam.
Let me clear it up for you. It came out of the monastic process in the Roman Empire. The people you call Arabs were actually dumped into that area from the Baltic states. I know what I'm talking about.
How does Ishmael fit into this situation?
Ishmael is a biblical creation that's out of the New Testament. In fact, the Quran was started in 1870 in Syria, and it was finished up in Trees, France.
Ishmael
was
the son of Abraham.
Huh?
Ishmael was the son of Abraham, like Isaac.
Look, that's Christian theology out of the New Testament or the Old Testament. It don't matter. But the New Testament was the basis of the Holy Quran, and wasn't no Islam before 1919 when the king
Quran was
of
finished.
That's absolutely
before the Quran
right.
was finished. That's true about what he's saying there now. You couldn't have an Islam without a Quran. It was Muhammadism.
Right. And they didn't accept. The Islamic world didn't accept the word Islam until the entire Islamic world or the Muhammadan world accepted it from 1919 to 1926. After that king, I can't remember his name. I got the book right here, though.
I've read Walter Williams' book, and a lot of the things in his book have been proven to be untrue.
The brother was correct that it was called Muhammadism.
Muhammadianism or Muhammadism?
No, it was Muhammadism. The majority of Africans that was brought here to the Americas was following tradition and Muhammadism, not no Christianity.
Right.
Missionaries didn't work their way into this brother's parents' land until 1841 in the Delta region.
And I want somebody to get that $5,000 if you can prove what Walter Williams say was inaccurate. I followed up on the references, and I ain't find no inaccuracies.
He said that about Jesus Christ. He didn't say that about Islam, now. He said it about Islam, too.
Never been a prophet Muhammad. The city of Mecca didn't exist until the late 1800s.
Hang on. His $5,000 reward was based on someone proving him wrong about has there ever been a man of any race, creed, or color ever walked the earth by the name of Jesus Christ. That's the $5,000 reward.
Right. And what
okay.
the historical origin of the Islam book was not as good as the historical origin of Christianity. The Islam one, he probably needs a little more work. I'm not co-signing Dr. Wesley Muhammad, but he did kind of blow holes to Walter Williams on that book.
No, he didn't. I read his books, too, and he is a ass-licking Muslim.
Well, that's true, too, but no, he put out, he's got a three-hour lecture.
And wait a minute. And he falls under the Christian sensibility from modest that created Islam, Ibn al-Arabi. Now, Dr. Walter Williams, or Walter Williams, he was correct about Muhammad being modeled off of the Moor from 11th century Spain called Ibn al-Arabi. He was correct.
That's not correct.
And he was correct.
Listen, bro, we actually got documentation. We got letters that the Prophet Muhammad sent to different people, like he sent a letter to the.
He couldn't even write. How are you gonna send it?
No. Well, he had scribes, my brother.
Oh, see, now you changed it.
Well, no.
Okay.
I've not changed anything.
I'm saying that it's a
historical document.
I'm here to tell you. I'm telling you, the Byzantine Empire, who was ruling that part of Arabia, didn't make no mention of none of that shit.
Brother, are you a historian, my brother?
You know, I know enough to know what I'm talking about.
I know, that's clear, but I'm asking you, are you a historian? Have you put out any information to refute or to debunk the actual letter?
What is the standard for being a historian? Because if you use a European standard, no, hell no. I wouldn't want to be.
Okay, well, then that answers my question there, brother. Well, I'm not a European,
so I shouldn't want to be.
Right, but, you know, black people are historians, too. So, you know, white people ain't the only ones who are smart. So, you know, that's another issue. But we can agree to disagree.
I'm a my historian. I'm not a historian. I'm a my historian.
That's cool, brother. You ain't got to cut. We can agree to disagree, you know, but I'm just saying that there are historical documents of the Prophet Muhammad that must be confronted. You know, we can't just dismiss them. If you can debunk them, then that's cool. If you put out some information or you got some good information, I'll read it. And, you know, if it's correct, I even say that I got it from you. You the person who told me correctly. But
so don't get it from me. Get it from the Encyclopedia of Islam.
I possess the Encyclopedia of Islam, and it does not.
Well, you need to read it because even the Encyclopedia Judaica tells you all they shit is fake. I mean, they don't lie.
But hold on, let's stick to the Encyclopedia of Islam. Hold on, the Encyclopedia of Islam does not say that the Prophet Muhammad was not a real person. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. Because it proves where
in the Encyclopedia of Islam does it say that the Prophet Muhammad was not a historical figure?
I'm saying he wasn't a historical figure.
Well,
hold on, you just said that the Encyclopedia of Islam does not say that the Prophet Muhammad was a real person. Now, I'm not asking what you say. I'm asking what you read in the Encyclopedia of Islam. You brought it up, my brother.
The Encyclopedia of Islam says that most of that information concerning him and other issues has been made up.
That's true. Most of
the Encyclopedia of Judaica says the same thing. It says the same
Hold on. Now, we agree that most of the canonical biography of the Prophet Muhammad is fabricated. That's true. That is absolutely
what makes you think,
true.
I want to see the evidence that he was real.
Okay, my brother, I'm in the chat room. What I'm going to do is I'm going to post up the actual historical letters we got, like the ones he wrote to the king of Byzantine, the ones
he
wrote to different
write.
Kings. That's not true. Even Dr. John Henry Clark has a lecture talking about how the Prophet Muhammad married his wife was a very rich woman. And so he
you
went
know,
through
I heard,
different
I heard
schooling
that lecture.
Right.
I heard
so,
that.
So he,
people
I've
are
never,
wrong sometimes.
I'm sorry, you said what? Can you repeat that last statement? I didn't hear you.
I heard that lecture by Dr. Clark, and people are wrong sometimes.
Right. I'm not saying that he's right all the time.
Let me ask y'all this. Y'all give legitimacy to Bilal, who's a third of the faith? And I agree. I would admit to y'all, my knowledge on Islam is not as great as it is about ancient African history and also Christianity. But Bilal, the Ethiopian who came up with the call of prayer, Hazan, was a real live person.
Yes,
and
sir.
When if Muhammad supposedly came, and he came out of Ethiopia, and if Muhammad went into Ethiopia, I mean, that's too much relevance there in that story, for because how would Bilal have became in the position that he was in, being a third of the faith, at the time when the faith was being created?
But see,
so
there
Muhammad
was no
had,
on the Kaaba.
Huh?
So what's tied to that Bilal story is the black stone of Kaaba is Mecca, and that's not real.
No, well, the black stone is there today. But it's inside.
Yeah, it wasn't there before the 1700s, 1800s.
Well, whatever. But Bilal did exist, though. That is true about him. Now, they don't give no credence
to him.
And
the other thing is this. The other thing is this, is that the Arabic language itself, the script, came out of Moorish Spain. It didn't come out of Arabia. And it's a form of hieratic.
Well, what I'm dropping in the chat room right now are the letters. Now, if you can disprove these, we can have a discussion on this. But these are actually available to
the public. The problem is you can't disprove something that hasn't been proven.
Well, it has been proven. That's the point. Ain't nobody debunked it yet.
What proves it? What proves that he wrote them letters when he couldn't write?
Well, brother, if we was in a room of scholars, you'd be the only one saying that ain't right.
And that's okay, because a lot of the scholars are trained by Europeans. And
well, regardless who trained them, you'd be
you'd be the only one to make sure you get no information from Europeans.
You'd be the only room. Well, sister, I spent 8 years out in the field doing field research. I was down in Hadi Wafa, where a civilization go back to 65,000 years, laying out lines, dusting stuff off, testing it with the latest barium thorium, a radioactive testing to see how old it was.
And
so
what that means?
You stepping out of place there now, young lady. But anyway,
how long stepping out of place? What did I say wrong?
You are challenging my credibility.
I wasn't even talking to you, number one. I was making a comment when he said that, but you get your information from Europeans. And what I'm saying is, if you're going to make that a criteria to dismiss somebody's information, then you have to make sure you get none of your information from Europeans, none whatsoever.
Well, Count Volpe.
And that's what would convince me.
We read Count.
But this is the thing.
You read Count Volpe's information, and he was about as pro-black as you ever could get. And he was European.
I'm not dismissing information based on where it came from.
No, he was European.
That's the only thing that I'm saying. Just because a European brings some information, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily all true or necessarily all false because it came from a European.
I agree with you on that. I don't know who would say that.
But they do have a reputation of fabricating a whole lot of shit.
And
the black people
does
too, especially when it comes to the comedic science and everything like that. There's a lot of black people that lied about a lot of the stuff that they got back in the 30s and 40s. So you just can't dismiss information because it came from a certain group of people.
I tell you, a lot of stuff that was fabricated, a lot of what we call black first was fabricated, like who laid this out and who invented this and who invented that.
Right. But this is the thing about it, the people who say that the Prophet Muhammad are not real people are usually white. Walter Williams is the only person, black person I know who made the claim. But, most of the people who confirm that he is real are non-white people, although there are a lot of white people too that do confirm that he was a real person too. At least historians of religions. All historians confirmed that he was real. Actually, we got more, and I'm not a Muslim, but we have way more evidence of Prophet Muhammad existing than Jesus. Jesus, we only got Josephus, the first century historian, but with Prophet Muhammad,
who wasn't real.
I would agree with you. He wasn't real. The Jesus damn show wasn't real.
You know what? You know what? I was here, Walter Williams and Dr. Ben and myself and a couple other people. We was at the Red Lobster here in St. Louis after they had done a lecture. And Walter Williams got to saying something. Dr. Ben was getting ready to smack him with his cane. I had to stop him.
That's right. Dr. Ben says that Prophet Muhammad was a real person. So did J.A. Rogers.
And Dr. Clark.
I'm going with Dr. Ben. I'm sorry, bro. I love you and respect
you
for our black brother.
When you know the process of how these things were formed, it ain't hard to understand that they're lying.
But this is my thing. You know, Walter Williams, he made a lot of claims in the book that are not accurate.
Of us is ancient Egyptians.
Right. Like when he said that there was no record of any Allah, you know, more than 200-300 years
ago.
He
said it wasn't no Kushites, too.
Right. So, you know, Walter Williams made a lot of mistakes. You know, that's what I'm saying. And I'm no Muslim, my brother, but I'm just saying this is, you know, we can't be out here denying truth just because we don't like
now,
Muslims.
Now, and for the record, I respect Walter. Me and Walter is friends, and Walter Williams does an excellent job on the ecumenical council meetings. But some of the things he say, I cannot agree with, and I tell him. And there's nothing wrong with that. People have to learn to agree to disagree.
Okay.
Theophilo Bingham and Diop didn't agree on everything. And they appeared in 1972 at the UNESCO conference where they took on the world of scholars on the people in ancient Egypt.
And part of Diop's problem was his Christian sensibility and him being married to a white woman.
Well, Diop wasn't a Christian. He was a Muslim, actually.
You didn't hear me. I said the Christian sensibility. Islam is Christian.
Brother, it's made up of more than just Christianity. That's what this all started over as.
So it's Christianity. You ain't saying nothing. So it's Christianity made up of more than Christianity.
Right. Exactly.
And another thing, one of the white scholars, Laird Scranton, even said that those religions that came through those Muhammadan, or what is it, the Abrahamic religion, are at the best watered-down versions that removed all the science, that you can't make sense of any of the science through that theology or anything they wrote.
That's true.
And that's Islam and Christianity.
Right. Nobody's debating that point. And that's actually correct. You know, but now when you say that Islam is only made up of Christianity or the Prophet Muhammad is not a real person, then, you know, that's where the debate comes in. But, you know, everything else
there's
no problem
with
it. The disagreement. Well, I don't mean debate like we on stage, you know, arguing. Well, like I said, we can agree to disagree. I ain't got no harsh feelings towards you. I ain't no Muslim. I don't give a damn about no Prophet Muhammad. I'm just saying, you know, we got actual historical records. I'm just, you know, just stating facts, bro. That's it.
And, you know, I don't see any primary information from a firsthand account of Muhammad. I've heard of the letters you're talking about.
That's firsthand documentation.
Because he came right. Okay. Well, not all documentation is right, as you just stated.
But this is the thing. Good methodology is proving that it's showing the error and proving that it's wrong. Now, if you can do that, that's good methodology, and I can work with that. But just saying that it's not real, you know, that's not, you know, that's what Walter Williams did, and it didn't really work for him. You know, that's why when Muhammad put out that lecture, Walter Williams ain't never did no response. It's been years since that came out.
That don't make it real.
I'm saying it hasn't been debunked yet. I'm not saying that it's correct or not. I'm saying that nobody has debunked it. Now, if you debunk it, then that means it's not real. But until then, I can't just say it's not real. I just got to go with the facts are on the table.
But the fact of the matter remains that Wesley Muhammad was debunked.
By who?
Himself.
On Prophet Muhammad being a real person?
By the virtue of being a Christian sensibility Muslim ass liquor.
Right, you know,
as a historian, he meets the criteria of not making the grade.
Listen, my brother, that's your personal opinion. I can respect it, you know. I mean, hey, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. You know, do what you do.
It's not just
how I feel.
It's the evidence I've come across.
Well, brother, can you present some of that evidence to prove that he's wrong on these points? Not on, you know, if he's an ass licker or not. I don't know if he lick ass. I want to know if he was wrong on these points we're talking about.
I'm not talking about a human's ass. I'm talking about the Muslim theology ass.
Right, and as I said, I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is this point we're talking about on these two specific points of Prophet Muhammad not being a real person and Islam only coming out of Christianity, not having influence from other religions, people, place, and space.
Let me say this. Prophets come out of theology. They don't come out of history. So you got it right there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Right, so without the Prophet Muhammad.
Bro, that's not evidence, bro. That's still your personal opinions, my brother.
There are 1,001 people named Muhammad, but that don't make it a prophet, Muhammad.
All right, never mind, bro. We can just agree to this.
But the fact that you would put a prophet in front of his name debunks him.
My brother, I didn't put the name prophet in front of his name, so I can't answer that. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
He's not my prophet.
I understand that. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just stating the fact that if the name has prophet in front of it, something wrong.
That's a fact.
And it leaves me with my sensibility not to trust it at all.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, my brother. If you're skeptical, I mean, skepticism is always a good thing, you know, a healthy skepticism, at least.
The only thing that I could hear wrong with that is the fact that you called it a fact. But other than that, I agree with the brother. There's nothing wrong with your opinion about anything, but I don't think it measures up to the criteria necessary to be called a fact.
Right, I agree. That's all I've been saying, too, so...
And nor do the letters measure up to a fact. I hear you, and I agree too.
What was that last statement, brother?
Nor do the letters measure up to a fact. So I also agree.
Okay.
It doesn't measure up to a fact, but it measures up to evidence, though. It is evidence.
I don't see it as valid evidence. I'm not there. I don't see that.
I feel you, my brother. You know, if you put out a paper debunking it, I'll read it, bro. I'll read it 2-3 times, you know. So
okay,
I love to see
work.
Somebody.
I appreciate that.
I look forward to it, bro.
So right. What I'm hearing is a basic skepticism about all religious concepts. Is that what I should be taking out of this conversation? From the brother?
My perspective is that all of the theological facts that people claim are simply theological, not facts.
Oh, so there's a healthy skepticism about all religions.
Right, and all of the attempts to make them historical.
Okay, well, I always thought it was for the symbolism more than anything else. I mean, it's just kind of obvious that, you know, factually, the information presented in most religious texts don't meet the smell test, if that's the way you want to put it. But there is a great symbolism involved in the things that are happening in religious texts. And I don't have a problem with the symbolism, it's just as long as we're talking about something good. I kind of like the savior concept, if you will. Of course, I'm not one to sit by and wait for the savior to come and do his thing, as it were. No, but I like the idea.
I hear you.
I mean, but you know, like I said, I mean, the cavalry riding to the rescue. I mean, that's Saturday morning, pal. I mean, regardless of what concept you're talking about, if you're talking about religiously
or any other concept, as far as I'm concerned, the cavalry riding to the rescue is a fallacy. It's not going to happen unless you
tune
in.
The other thing, that bothers me is when people retrograde current concepts back 1,300 years into something that wasn't there, which we established earlier.
See, my only answer to that situation is, I mean, I have no idea what was going on back then. I wasn't there, and I don't time travel. But, you know, like I said, I mean, at this point in time, you know, my concern with, okay, like I was trying to tell, okay, I hate to do this because I don't want to get back into that argument. Talking about with the 100 million slave thing or 60 million slave thing or 5 slave thing, my only concern is, okay, for my money, the same situation that was in existence then is being perpetuated to this very day, basically trying to do the same thing with a new mix. And so, therefore, for that reason alone, I can't hang with it. I mean, I have to, you know,
thanks.
I have to figure out a way to get past this one, you know, because the way that we sort of got past the last one obviously wasn't sufficient. The history, like I said, from a symbolic perspective, the history keeps you from making the same mistake. Even if the history wasn't true. I mean, I just don't see black people falling down and becoming slaves again the way they were back then. But that doesn't mean I don't see black people as being enslaved.
And one of the things that the Encyclopedia Islam did state was that but we have no certain data for the Meccan period. And so if there's no certain data for the Meccan period, how do you place somebody in that period?
Well, if I could just add something, man, you know, there's actually the Encyclopedia Islam is terribly outdated. They're actually right now producing the Encyclopedia of Muhammad with all the evidence and all the...
Oh, they caught on to the trick, huh? Okay, I hear you. They caught on that it didn't make no damn sense. Okay, I got you.
No, but you know, Encyclopedia Islam was actually based on a lot of Christian and Jewish information, a lot of the propaganda they put out, and so it wasn't really authentic to begin with, so it was problematic in that sense, and that's why usually, that's why most of the prophets, Muhammad, as they call him, that's why most of his canonical biography is incorrect. So, you know, once this new encyclopedia comes out, we'll all be able to look at it and judge then whether or not, you know, it meets the smell test, as the brother said earlier. But they are currently putting that together right now, so we'll see, you know.
That's good to know. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, I actually had an exchange with Dr. Wesley Muhammad on Facebook about a year and a half ago on this subject of the Prophet Muhammad, because I was, you know, telling him that I didn't really know of too much evidence of him. I wasn't convinced that he was a real person. And he had that's when he had brought up the Walter Williams book, and I told him I had read it. And it did raise a lot of questions. And one thing I get it, I'll disagree with Dr. Wesley all the time, but he's one of the few scholars who will engage in, you know, in an intellectual exchange of ideas at a drop of a hat. And he did provide
me
a lot of information. Yeah,
he
provided me a lot of information.
We talked to him on the Amin Ra Squad. We talked to him on the Amin Ra Squad several times, and he waffled on a couple of things, but he do engage. You're right about
that. Yeah.
You know what? I was involved in a Black Jesus discussion that lasted at least 16 months on Black Voices. 16 months on Black Voices. Matter of fact, it was some shows what was the show at that time? Well, you know, like Johnny Carson. It wasn't Johnny Carson, it was somebody else. They even talked about this was going on in that particular show. But hey, when people get into, and this must have been back in like 1987 or 1988, somewhere around that time. And one of the brothers that was involved in, I ended up meeting him over in Kemet. Me and Brother Rad, he came out of Canada. But those type of discussions can go on for a long time. Many people make their points based on, you know, reading something that somebody else wrote. And that can be very dangerous sometimes, because People will write something, then later on come and revise actually what they wrote, and you may not have the latest revision.
That's true, sir.
Okay. I'd just like to make a couple of points here. Point number one, okay. Now, first it was the Book of Islam, right? No, the Encyclopedia of Islam?
Yes, sir.
And the questions that were brought to mind about the Encyclopedia of Islam is the influence that other religions outside of Islam had on the Encyclopedia of Islam. Okay. Now, the suggestion is that the propaganda from the other religions corrupted the Encyclopedia of Islam, basically made it moot, or made it null
and void. And I say it created it. He said corrupted.
Okay.
Well, I would say that most of the sources were from the Catholic Church, and so it's just a lot of propaganda. And all of it's not incorrect, but but as far as the biography of Prophet Muhammad, it is incorrect. Yes, sir.
Okay. So now we're dealing with the Encyclopedia of Muhammad, which is basically going to be a book written by Muslims. Members of the Islamic faith?
It's written by historians of religion, those who specialize in the field of Islam. Not all of them are Muslims, though.
Okay. So,
but you do have Muslim participation.
Once again, everybody's going to have their input at what's going on with the Encyclopedia of Muhammad.
Can you ask that one more time, sir?
No, once again, other religions are going to have input as far as the accuracy, the propaganda that will be contributed by them to the Encyclopedia of Muhammad.
Well, we can only determine that once we see it. It hasn't been released yet. You know, they're still compiling all the information, and they're picking, it's an entire panel who are picking the scholars who are involved of it. Matter of fact, Dr. Wesley Muhammad has been asked to participate in some form or fashion. I'm not exactly sure. But we don't know, I can't say that it's going to be incorrect information or propaganda as of yet. I know the Encyclopedia of Islam, we can say that about it just because most of the sources are the Catholic Church, who, you know, is just a conflict of interest because they're not trying to convert no damn body to anything other than Catholicism. So, you know, that's the situation with that one. But this one, that's not been determined yet. So we'll see. We'll see, though.
Part of my position is the art of war, that when you control both sides, you're the winner. And that's what I see going on with all three of those religions, that one's struggling the other.
Well, that there's a lot of truth in that, bro. You know, they are all Abrahamic religions. They all claim to come from Abraham, which, you know,
in itself is very hard to prove. That's a cover for white supremacy for me.
Cover for white supremacy.
Yeah, that whole three card Molly thing going on right there.
Well, I'm of the opinion that white supremacy works for all religions, but I do understand what you're saying. Those are the three, you know, biggest ones now.
The three major ones, right.
But you know, the other two religions, though.
So basically, the entire religious concept is being called into question here. That's what I'm hearing, right?
Right.
Well, it's
all religions.
Well,
all
those
religions,
three specific religions.
No black man controls any religion. I would say an Arab has just as much hold on Islam as any white man is controlling Islam. But I don't see any religion controlled by black people.
Well, if it hadn't been for what they've done in the
not even the African religion.
Listen,
no.
If it hadn't been for what they'd done during the 25th dynasty, there wouldn't be no Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Christianity,
right.
Islam.
Absolutely.
But it hadn't been what the blacks done when they defeated Sennacherib and the Assyrians. The possibility of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, we may not even be here talking about that today.
And this is what I know, is that the fragment
of
that the fragments of the stuff out of our knowledge base was not originally called religion. And if that term in and of itself is not an original African term. So there's a lot of levels to this that give me doubt on all the rest of it.
It all comes out of the Shetat Nedda. That's where it all goes back to, what we know today. Even, I mean, it's very funny, but if you go back and look at the beginning where people in history developed these thoughts, it comes out of the Shetat Nedda, which was controlled by black people.
Right.
And how can it be controlled by you if it could be taken from you, reversed, and used to enslave you? You never had control over it.
Well, people take things to make work for themselves. Now, what happens later on, it may not have been the real purpose of them doing it in the beginning. You know, if everyone here on this line was to say, we're going to start building cars tomorrow, well, we surely wouldn't go back and start building Model T Fords. We build off of what we have in our hand today. So that's exactly what those people done back in those days, too. They
took
convenience.
But let me say
I would build a Tucker.
When Model T came out, it was other people that wanted to build cars too. And still to this day, you still see a Ford.
Well, wanted to build and had built is two different things.
But one thing you don't see is black people controlling any religion.
Black folks
they
not
really
only control
them, but they don't control them.
But black dynasty, civilization, army, militaries did control the world back during those times. As a matter of fact, they controlled.
They might have controlled the world, but they didn't control religion.
They did control. Well, they set the basis that all religions are built off of.
Right.
The fundamental basis. I mean, like if you're gonna bake a cake, one of the basic ingredients that you got to have is flour.
They did not control it. They just had some information.
If they created it, surely they would have controlled it, don't you think?
Wait a minute. There's no proof that they created it either.
It is
they
proof.
They just had it.
It's proof that there
is no proof that they created it.
It was the only thing going at that time.
You wasn't there.
Oh, man, good gracious. Young people
and I think the point is that the fragments of what we created are very easily manipulated into a Frankenstein of sorts of something totally different than what it started off as.
Don't mean you created it.
Deal with
right.
Frankenstein
right.
from a position of functionality, from a position of what it is that's being accomplished, from a position of productivity. What is it that these religions were supposed to do? Obviously, they haven't accomplished it. So actually, there's really no need for them to continue to exist.
Let me ask that alone, young lady, do you have a baby?
Oh, God.
No, I'm just wondering, do you have a child?
Yeah.
Who's the daddy?
Oh, God.
And how do you know?
Where's this going?
No, I'm just asking you a question.
Why is it going would be a better question.
You got a child.
I know.
I'm asking, who is the daddy and how do you know?
Please say what you're supposed to say, sister.
I was there when it was conceived.
Please say what you're supposed to say.
I was there when they were conceived. There is no doubt because I was there when they were conceived.
Why are you answering this man's question?
Good answer.
How would you know? If you're there from the conception, then you would know. I mean, couldn't no man come and say, well, you know what, this is my baby, and I know I ain't never had sex with him.
Boy. So much for that manner thing, huh?
What's the point?
You know, if somebody cut off my finger and took it to Chicago and said, this is Kemet, or Kemet 2, you know, that wouldn't even be accurate. It might be my DNA. It might be a piece of my hand. But without being connected to the body in the whole context, it's not me. And that's the way that these religions were formed, from hodgepodge pieces of a Frankenstein creation whose purpose was to enslave people. That was the point. It was a power system.
Oh, so that was the point of religion, enslavement. Oh, so I guess it has to.
Yeah, a power system. It was a political power system.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to do some good at some point in time. I mean, that's always the symbolism that
It was never destined to do good. It was never destined to do good because at the time when we were practicing our own thing, it wasn't called religion. So they took it out of context and then hodgepodged it together.
But they had a right to do that,
though.
Because
it wasn't called religion, that mean it wasn't a religion? Okay, excuse me now.
They had a
right
to do that, though.
You can't retrospect a concept back into time when it didn't exist that way.
Well, that's debatable. It definitely wasn't a religion as we see religions today. But the brother, one of the brothers mentioned Shatulat Netter, which was, you know, could be classified as a religion. So, you know, we did
by whom?
Have. We,
by the white theologians? By whom? The people there didn't call it a religion.
No, I'm talking about our scholars and our, you know,
that's retrospecting again. That's applying a modern concept to something ancient, which leaves too much room for inaccuracy.
No, well, yeah, if that was the case, that I would agree with you. But I'm just saying, you know, the concept, a lot of the practices that we would consider religious practices happened back then too. You know, so you know it. It could be, and then you could also argue that it wasn't a religion. It's just perspective on it. But I do understand the point you're making, but I think the brother was actually correct that, you know, the ingredients that we created absolutely did create religion. It's also debatable on whether or not our role we actually played in creating these religions. There was black people who participated in the creation of Christianity, of Islam and Judaism. The effect or how many of them is debatable, but we do know that there were some. Many African Center scholars on record stating as much, but that's a debate for the academics, man. You know, and then
how they did that in some instances, like with Arius, they basically wrote their theology off of his protest to the nonsense they were doing.
Right, but you know the thing about black folks, man, we've been able to take all the bullshit and get what we need out of it. Like he was saying with Christianity, the Christian sensibility, and the brother was making the point that, you know, he 40, 50 years ago, black people were doing great things, and we were still Christian. So that, you know, we can take pretty much anything and get what we need out of it. And as long as we can still do that, now we haven't been doing that recently. But if we can get back to that, you know, that's better than nothing. But, you know, I feel that I probably need to get back to the original source. I would always co-sign that. But, you know, it is.
And that would require the original language and context which the concept came out of. That's all I'm saying.
That's true. Absolutely.
On that point, then, I'd have to agree with the brother as far as his Christian sensibility is concerned, because the successes that you speak of when black people were steeped in Christianity, the one thing that kept them from perpetuating those successes was that Christian sensibility that said turn the other cheek when somebody's slapping you upside your head.
That's actually what we just got from white folks in general. The Bible actually says something different. Jesus in the Bible said if you don't got a sword, you should sell the clothes off your back and go buy a sword, you know. So Jesus in the Bible ain't talking about that. That's why Dr. Khalid Muhammad referred to Jesus as the black revolutionary messiah. Now, we take white people's interpretations of what's actually written in the book, but I can find plenty of examples in the book where that turn the other cheek shit ain't, you know, don't apply. That's just shit we got from white folks.
That turn the other cheek shit, as you put it, was the force behind the civil rights movement. So obviously, a whole bunch of people bought into it.
Well,
I agree with
you.
Yeah,
that's
a strategy.
And I was one of those
brothers in the other camp back
then.
So.
Y'all have to realize that even though black people love Jesus, they don't follow Jesus. They follow Paul.
Well, they all, Paul was fictitious too.
Right. So now y'all understand.
If black people follow Jesus, black people
would
be Jews.
Right. Now you follow this, you understand the sensibility I was speaking on, that it's so convoluted that it always leads you back into the lap of the child molester, Jesus Christ.
Oh, well, but here's the point. You know, people came, societies came up with God out of fear, strictly out of fear. And every ethnic group had their own God until some radicals came along and said that it's only one. And it became popular.
Or you accept mine or die.
Well, it's kind of simplistic, too, because, you know, cut out all of the BS, if you will. I mean, it's easy to deal with the concept of one, that, I mean, from a logical perspective. Until somebody else can duplicate what's happened here, i.e. the universe, come on.
But I don't know about that because
this isn't a matter of feelings. Search your logic. You know, trace it back as far as you want to go.
I'm not feeling.
Until you get to one. You know, and whatever
I'm
you want
from
to
logic.
Well, that one was Patah.
I'm coming from logic and intuition.
The first
title that was given to the creator of the universe was given to that of Ptah, who created all the lesser gods, by the way.
Okay, so that's a name. You know, I'm talking about a concept here. I mean, the word God or deity or whatever it is that you want to call it.
Ptah is more than an idea. It is the concept and the word. And this is the point. There was no separation between the power of the word and the actual manifestation of a concept when we created that. But that's different in theology.
They said on Ptah, existence itself came into existence when I came into existence. That's power.
Correct. Not yet that existence existed when I existed. And all the existences, I existed prior to them. I got you. You're right. Now, the problem with that is, if we do our studying, we'll also know that that contains the science of what the Dogon now call Kotolo, which serves the same function on a scientific level. And so when you can marry these concepts across genres, then you're working with some gas. You're cooking with gas. But theology doesn't allow you, current theology, Western theology, white supremacy doesn't allow you to connect the concepts to a functional level to where on multiple levels you get the point.
From my perspective, white supremacy can't even fuck with, you know, fuck with the beginning, the origin, the genesis, if you will.
And so the fear-based